This week, ZeniMax enters the crunch culture conversation with accusations against management overworking employees. Head of Xbox Game Studios, Matt Booty, disputes the accusations with accurate deflection and lack of emphasis on the important details, rightly stating that the reports were about Fallout 76 and Skyrim, which Xbox Game Studios had no organizational ownership stake in. But there's more. I can't read the whole article in this intro, but your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki will bring you more details on this and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now in the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are live once again with episode number 921 of our show, the first of our 21st year for tonight, July the 3rd of 2022. My name is Rob Roberts, and I'm here with you every week with my co-hosts. Say hello and say wow wig to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
What do you mean wig?
This is your real hair? You don't wear wigs?
No, it's not my real hair. I would not be blonde on purpose except via a wig. Although, I mean, I'm actually rather surprised at how well the blonde works. Mm-hmm. I never thought that I would look okay as a blonde.
If I knew you were going to wear a wig tonight, I would have worn a wig too. But the only wig I have is my Yvette wig from when I played Yvette in Clue a few months ago. So it would have been a little silly, but fun. So maybe next time.
How about I loan you some of my, you know, 36 wigs?
Sounds good. At some point, we'll have a wig night, and I'd love to see how Techmaster Loki would respond to wig night. Hi, Loki.
I don't own any wigs, so that can't work.
Well, Dark Sakura has a collection.
I just offered to loan wigs out. I'll give you something fine. Like in a steel blue.
Would you at least consider doing like one of those stupid hats with a built-in mullet or something?
Sure. Hat right. Mullet. Okay. Yeah. That's
there we
fine.
Go. Hat mullet. That's about as close. That's about as close as we're gonna get Loki to do that. Hello, hello. What's the game playing behind you tonight, Loki?
It's I think called In the Deep. It looks like Metal Slug, but with a submarine.
I was gonna say it looks like something out of like the Genesis era, but okay, like a Neo Geo
it's an arcade game.
Oh, okay. I like that. Very cool. Orange Right in chat says In the Hunt. Is what that
oh,
was called.
Is it In the Hunt? Yeah. My mistake.
There it is.
I couldn't see it behind my head, so I had the name, like, I had it, you remembered a second ago, but, like, I couldn't see it.
All good. And, of course, the comments coming in live, because we do tape live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network, or Voice of Geeks Network, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. Bobby back tonight after his trip over to Summer Games Done Quick. Which he talked a lot about on his show tonight. So obviously I'm going to give his show a plug. He talked a little bit about kind of what it was like to be there in person, because even though he's been involved with with the Games Done Quick organization since 2020 as a volunteer, for obvious reasons, this is the first time that he was able to go live and in person. And it was also very interesting to me as a bystander, just seeing how seriously they took precautions at GDQ. Holy goodness. And one story I'll spoil from Bobby's show is he was saying that there was a nurses convention that was happening at the exact same hotel out there in the, I think the Minneapolis area. There was a nurses convention happening on the ground floor and they were upstairs or something. And that the mask compliance at Games Done Quick was better than the nurses convention, where it sounds like it was slim to none from what it sounds like. So that is pretty interesting. And then you see the arcade and everything spaced out. So that's the way to have a convention right now in 2022. Are you listening, Anime Expo? I don't think they are.
That's very interesting, the max policy. But what I really want to know is if anybody made the joke when the nurses walked by and said, "Hello, nurse."
I'm sure.
Somebody had to have, I would hope. I would know. Let's see. SSG100 Matt in chat says, yeah, Summer Games Done Quick won't be a super spreader, but the detractors won't listen. There's just going to be people that you kind of have to look at it, that the pandemic has affected people in many ways. And major distrust of crowds of people is a pretty big thing for a lot of people at this point. And there's a part of me that kind of gets it. I kind of think on social media, people kind of have a blank check to run wild sometimes. I think there is a line that has to be walked for many people. Like, I went to Dragon Con last year. I went in part for the mental health component. Like, there's a lot about the in-person and seeing the people that I really needed back in my life. And the fact that Dragon Con took the stuff seriously and, you know, had the requirements they did and had pretty decent compliance. I'd say about like 90-95% compliance. Like, most people I saw was wearing masks and stuff. It wasn't a super spreader event. And I guarantee you Games Done Quick is not going to be a spreader event of any sort. Yeah, some people had COVID. But like, they brought it in from like having already been sick, or it was the fucking flights. Because if anything is a super spreader event, it's airplanes right now. So I would say that Games Done Quick was really a lesson from what I'm observing and how to do this shit right moving forward. And I'm fairly confident the number of COVID cases that were transmitted at Games Done Quick are going to be slim to none. And if they're slim, it's going to be because like so-and-so and so-and-so went to Arby's together outside the hotel or whatever. And it was that sort of thing and not at the actual convention. So, this is your 100 Matt in chat says, I went to MAGFest for the same reasons. We all have to just live our lives the best and comfortably as we can. Just have to assume everyone will do all the right things going in and afterwards. Yeah, I mean, the opportunity to rid the world of COVID passed. We failed. Society failed to get rid of COVID when they could. So now it's...
I will say that I don't think there was any getting rid of it anyway.
Probably not.
Just to the nature of coronaviruses themselves, It did exactly what it was expected to do, which is evolve and become weaker.
And, you know, I think you kind of look at the areas that were doing COVID precautions really well, like New Zealand, let's say. You know, in the beginning, they were doing really well, but now it's kind of hit the point where it's like they're kind of in the same boat as everyone else. And that's just what it is now. And it sucks. I don't mean to sound complacent with it, but... thank gosh, the science has evolved in 2.5 years because I think we've been able to make a lot of progress in how to treat, how to vaccinate, you know, and all this other stuff. It's just vaccine has that kind of invokes that most people feel vaccines prevent diseases because the vaccines that you get as a kid for mumps, rubella, most of us got vaccinated as a kid and it was not a big fucking deal at all because everybody knew these diseases were serious. You get vaccinated, you don't get them. You get the vaccine, you don't get them. And I think it causes a mental thing with a lot of people because like you get a vaccine, but you can still get this. But it's just the vaccines help mitigate the damage, right? So I don't know. Maybe I'm not one to speak on it because I still have not had COVID as far as I know. Maybe I've had it and I'm unaware.
Remember, the thing with COVID is exactly like getting the flu shot. It's going to be that you are vaccinated against that strain of it.
Yeah.
And with an illness that's constantly mutating, the vaccines are working against the strain they're created for.
Yes. Ironically, in many ways, COVID is the flu now. How ironic, but it, obviously there are differences. I don't mean to draw a literal line, but still. Yeah, the flu can kill people. Yeah.
Yeah. A cold can kill people, you know, and a cold is, again, another kind of coronavirus.
Yep,
it is. So people need to look back and not simplify the science of it and look at the big picture. It's something that one has to pay attention to holistically.
Yeah.
And although now there's a research thinking that they know what's causing long COVID and how to combat that.
That's great. And that's the type of advances that are going to help people be more comfortable when weighing the risk. Because let's be real, I'm going to go to Dragon Con this year. I'm already scheduled for 4 panels. It's very likely, being where Dragon Con is, there's probably not going to be any precautions this year. I'm hopeful that there will be. There's probably not going to be. So
I'm going to TwitchCon.
Yeah, same thing, right? And it's like,
I'm masking.
And masks will always be optional. And that's probably something I'll still continue to do at Dragon Con. TwitchCon might be able to do some different things. But also the way things are in October, even Labor Day, the way things are then versus the way they are now, this thing changes on a daily basis. You know, it's wild. Bobby in chat says, all this, talking about Summer Games Done Quick and his participation in that, has been great for my mental health. I wasn't doing well in late 2020. I was medically healthy, but not mentally healthy. I'm both medically and mentally healthy right now. And I, from the mental health perspective, I can speak in a similar place. I was not in a great place either in 2020. Mentally, I'm doing better. But then I had this whole interesting type 2 diabetes thing that I've had to deal with, which I don't know. Like, again, I am convinced the vast majority of diabetes is genetic, period. You have to be disposed genetically to have this. But I think there is a certain element of it that was rushed because of the depression I had in 2020 in dealing with the pandemic. So
there are also with type 2 diabetes, genetics are a big component of it because my family has a disposition. Mm-hmm. But also diet and lifestyle do play a very large factor in it.
Yeah. And both of those things were shit in 2020 and 2021. Mm-hmm. And thankfully, I was diagnosed right around the time things started to get better, because it was a month after DragonCon. So I was able to make the changes I needed to make. And, you know, how many pounds am I down today? I think 52 pounds is how much weight I've lost so far on this, which, you know.
Wow, you lost all those pounds?
Is there a joke you're setting up here?
Because I found them all.
So I don't mean to I'm laughing with you, not at you. I'm also laughing because I've heard that joke a lot. But that is, well, that's also the pandemic, right, Loki? Like, you pretty and much, everyone yeah. else that makes that joke when it, I tell them that is blaming it is. The pandemic. It's COVID.
It is. It is because, like, my job used to have a very large campus. And so it would be like, okay, you have a meeting here. It's on the fifth floor. Then you have another meeting that's like five buildings over that way. Then you have a meeting that's over there. Plus then, like, I also used to motivate myself to walk for like at least like an hour during lunch because I had to get out of the office because I can't stand my coworkers. So but now that I'm at home, I don't have all those things. I don't go anywhere. Yeah. And so you don't get all that exercise. And even if you just eat pretty slim, it's just, yeah.
For the 6 months that Alan and I worked in the same building, I don't talk about this a lot on the show, but I'll just say Alan and I work at the same place. We did not meet at work. Alan and I have been together for over a decade. We did not meet at work, and I did not intend to work at the same place Alan does. It's just coincidences are very interesting sometimes, and the right thing happened at the right time. But my point is, for the 6 months that the two of us worked in the same office, we worked on different floors, different departments. Like, we didn't see each other throughout the day, really. But we would take our breaks and lunches together, and we would walk every time. And yeah, we lost that too. Absolutely. But to bring it back to video games, because we are a gaming podcast, believe it or not, I will say that, like, Pikmin Bloom, and I've mentioned this on the show before, but those types of ways to incentivize fitness and walking could not have come out at a better time. And I really credit for all the shit that game gets. And even I've been dumping on that game in the last month because I think the changes they made were terrible. But I will still always credit that game with coming out at just the right time to really incentivize me to walk 10,000 more steps than I might otherwise. And so, you know, that's been huge. That's been instrumental in managing everything that I've been managing and for me to be able to say I've lost over 50 pounds and all that. So anyway, some other comments in chat. SJ100 Matt says, I maintained my pre-pandemic weight because I had the New York City commute, which was a lot of walking. Yeah. Yeah. Big cities. Yeah, for sure. All right.
Actually, yeah. I'll go ahead and go on record. I gained back about 5 pounds.
Okay.
But I've also... No, I haven't been in a good place for like the last few months. Mm-hmm. I have been lifting my weights again.
Good.
And there's just something about making yourself, you know, sore that's a little cathartic, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, take that body. You're going to feel better and you're going to like it.
Yeah.
So
it was.
And then I get to walk around like a badass when I'm done.
Forcing myself to go that first mile and interrupt my day to do it was the hardest step. And then everything was, you know, kind of downhill from there. So anyway, Let's talk about games, because believe it or not, it is a gaming podcast. So, when we're sick, we play a lot of video games while we're trying to recover. Let's talk about what's happened in the gaming world this week. I do want to just say thank you, everybody, for a really wonderful show last week, celebrating our 20th anniversary. We had a little bit of a atypical show because we really just spent the entire 3.5+ hours, is what it clocked in as, talking about us. Not just us, but the last 20 years of gaming history, our show, and everything we've kind of seen over the last 20 years, the good, bad, and the ugly, all of it. And I really want to thank everybody for participating in that show. Not just my co-hosts, of course, but just everybody, in the Twitch chat and so forth. And I'm sure many of you that listen on the podcast feed as well, thank you for checking it out. And I've seen some tweets and things like that. So just thank you. We will get to some more towards the end of the show tonight because we never did emails last week, and we never did tweets or any of that stuff. So I want to do some of that tonight. But we'll get to that later in the show, but I just want to say thank you. And here we go, year 21. So, Loki, why don't you start us off with a wrap-up of kind of the big headline from the week, right?
Yeah, so it was a partner showcase for the Nintendo Direct Mini, so they were showing off a bunch of different third-party games. So some of the different trailers that they had, Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak, that came out on June 30th.
Do you know you know something weird with Monster Hunter Sunbreak, though? I'm going to say this because I've seen Shane tweeting about it, and he's right. Not a lot of people are noticing this. That Amiibo figure that was supposed to come out, that was like a GameStop exclusive here in the U.S., I think it did come out in Europe and Japan. It didn't show up here after all, and it has subtly disappeared from the website. Even talking about the collector's edition or whatever it was did come with an Amiibo, but the collector's edition even advertises these other Amiibo. You can't get them in the US, and like, it's not being reported on in the media, because I guess there's no headline to copy paste. But I thought that was very interesting, what Shane kind of brought light to there, because he's big on the Monster Hunter series and Amiibo collecting, and he was like, do you know these things just disappeared completely, and GameStop never got them in, and they're not going to. I thought that was very interesting. Anyway, sorry.
Maybe they'll probably just like suddenly come out later on without any fanfare.
But, I can see that happening. Hopefully not an exclusive to one store, because I'm never a fan of that. But
Yeah. So what else? We had the Nier Automata, the end of a Eura edition, which is going to be including all the DLC, kind of your Game of the Year edition type thing.
That's impressive that they got Nier Automata running on the Switch. I mean, but at the same time, It was a PS4, Xbox One game, and that is about the power in the Switch. So it's not too surprising, but it's still neat.
Yep. This weird looking game that's Lorelei and the Laser Eyes. I don't know.
Sounds interesting.
It's a puzzle game by the devs who did Sayonara Wild Hearts, and that's coming out next year. This is surprising because I think we were just joking about it the other day about like, oh, Konami's not doing anything with their properties. Super Bomberman R2 is coming out now on the Nintendo Switch.
I'm glad the one release that worked out for them, they're going to make a sequel too.
Yeah, so that's coming out.
The retro collections year. Have done very well. Sorry, I shouldn't speak too much out of turn. I'm glad their one like new thing is getting a sequel.
Something that came out of nowhere, Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection. So it's a collection of 10 of the, they were portable games, if I remember correctly, for the Game Boy Advance.
I could hear Ranma celebrating all the way out here when that got announced. But that is a really cool announcement. I mean,
it is.
It's in the same kind of family as, you know, they did a Mega Man, 1 through 6 collection. And I think it was 7 through 10. And I think that didn't they do the X games at some point? They put all that in a collection too. And so I think this is like, what else can we squeeze out of Mega Man into a collection? But Capcom is also pretty big on these collection games lately, right? Fighters Collection just came out not that long ago, right?
It's making the money. We know probably Arcade very Stadium. Minimal effort.
It is. And also they've been pretty decent collections, all things considered. So, I think that that's exciting about that. DJ Rama S is actually in chat and says, I lost my proverbial shit at work, seriously, so cannot wait. Ooh, good call from Orange, right? Who says, one more step towards the Legends Collection. I hope that
hardly
is...
a collection with two games, it's... or I guess there is Misadventures of Tronbon, but like
yeah, that's you put Tronbon in there too.
Three, I sure.
Hey, you know what? It's enough to grab a headline.
Sure. What else? We have the Pac-Man World Repack. Which I don't know if that's a new. I mean, I don't
it's a remaster of old game. Yeah, complete with Pac-Mom instead of Ms. Pac-Man.
Because that's coming out August
6th. Pac-Man got a new woman.
Pac-Mom. there's a game called Blank, which is like this kind of monochrome. It almost looks like
looks without. Really cool.
Yeah, it kind of. The art style reminds me a little bit of Calvin and Hobbes, but, mm-hmm. you know, obviously not Calvin and Hobbes. And that's coming out on the Switch February 2023. They had...
quick comment, sorry, from Elliot B. in our chat, who says, by the way, good to see you, who says, I always... Hmm?
Oh, I thought it was Blanc, like white.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
I thought you said Blank.
Oh. No, Blanc.
Okay.
Elliot B. in our chat says, I always wanted to check out Battle Network when I had a GBA. It always looked so cool. Yeah, and you know what? There are 10 games in that collection. Now, granted, it's a little bit of fuzzy math because like they started to do the Pokemon thing where there's like, you know, red and blue. But still, I think there's six truly unique games in that series. And so that's a pretty meaty collection that they're putting together there, which is pretty cool. Also, talking about the Pac-Man, DJRama-esque says Pac-MILF. Is the new mommy in the game there. So, sure. All right.
Yes. Bought it, but I didn't say it because, you know, that's just ridiculous.
I know. Anyway, moving on. Other announcements from Nintendo Direct.
Return to Monkey Island is going to be coming to the Switch as well. Mm-hmm. So we basically the same trailer that's been shown already. I'm very much looking forward to that. We have Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. And they teased that... Bowser is going to be in this as well. So that's pretty neat. That's coming out in October. A little Noah Sign of Paradise, which is an RPG by the folks who made Dragalia Lost. This game called Railgrade, which is, I guess, it's like a survival game with a train. It's kind of neat looking. RPG Time, The Legend of Wright. And this is coming out on August 18th. It's like a hand-drawn character. Almost looks like, remember how we saw the other storybook game, but I think less, you know, the hand-drawn stuff, more kind of like, like papercraft almost looking. And then Sonic Frontiers coming to the Switch. Cool. That game we saw, this may have been during Key 3, but Disney Dreamlight Valley. It's that free to play game, I think, that's coming out. That's kind of like The Sims almost. So that's going to be out September 6th. Live got a demo, if I remember correctly, and that's also coming out here in a few weeks.
I needed to grab that. I forgot to grab that.
Doraemon Story of Seasons, Friends of the Great Kingdom. That's pretty cool looking. And that's apparently a sequel to the Doraemon Story of Seasons game. And that's coming out later this year. We had a trailer for Minecraft Legends again. And that's, you know, obviously coming out later this year as well. Dragon Quest Treasures, which is a spinoff of the Dragon Quest series that has treasure hunting in it. I mean, I think we could figure that out based on the title. And that's coming out December 9th of this year.
Well, Dragon Quest has had, you know, success with the Builders spinoff. So I'm not surprised that it's kind of it's interesting that it's following a very similar thing with Minecraft, where it's all these different spinoff games all of a sudden. But it's cool. I'd check it out.
Yeah, it's like I don't know if it's like a loot RPG type thing or something like that. They don't really show much in the trailer, but... Portal Companion Collection.
Sorry, Dartus U says, I think they announced Treasures previously. I think it's a Dragon Quest XI spinoff. I had no idea. I missed it. Somehow it wasn't on my radar. Too many games, not enough time.
The Portal Companion Collection with Portal 1 and 2. That's going to be coming out, I think, later this year. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was out today. One of those "it's out today" announcements.
Well, it was out like 15 years ago. But sure. Why not on the Switch?
Well, it's out today on the Switch.
They're classic games. Why not?
It's not real gaming until you play it on the Switch. Harvestella, which is, I guess, a similar game to like Rune Factory. And that's supposed to be coming out on the Switch November 4th. Looks, I mean, definitely the imagery and the graphics look a lot like Rune Factory. Persona 5 Royale is, I guess, a remaster that's coming out on October 21st. And, of course, there's also supposed to be ports for Persona 3 Portable and Persona 4 Golden, which I think we talked about those before. I think that may have been like on the Xbox announcement. And that's, I think, it.
Well, that was still a lot of stuff you just ran through there really quick. But, but yeah, that was a pretty packed direct. You know, they made sure to clarify it was all third party stuff. So we know we weren't going to see things like Breath of the Wild 2 or anything like that. Although I'm sure some people were still disappointed because the internet is crazy sometimes. But I think it was a nice, pretty meaty show. Considering that it wasn't a major direct, you know, it wasn't, you know, one of the Nintendo's, they called it a mini, basically. It was pretty maxi for a mini. So.
I still think Sonic Frontiers looks so boring. Like, I don't know what it is about that. Like, it just does not show well.
I think I need to see like streamers playing that game, or just, I think I need to see what the game like really truly looks like in motion from real people in order to be able to make like an accurate judgment on it. Or get my hands on it, or get hands on it myself, obviously. But yeah, I just, I'm not really enthused so far by what I'm seeing, considering all the hype behind the whole open world thing, but we'll see. Yeah. Go ahead, Tosaka.
Oh, I was just saying, I just popped on Nintendo's channel on the site, and they're apparently having a sale through the 7th.
Yeah, there's a lot of places having a long, you know, because it's a holiday, even though there's nothing worth celebrating this year. Technically, it's a holiday, so there's a lot of sales going on right now. So yeah, Nintendo's one of them. Steam's wrapping up their, if they didn't already, their summer sales coming to an end pretty soon. I know Battle.net's been having one, like I'm sure Epic Games, well, they did one earlier, so I'm not sure they're running one right now, but there's a lot of sites having a sale. So yeah, Nintendo's even on that too. And the Rare first party games even on sale with that. So there's a lot of stuff you can catch up on, because Nintendo games like never go on sale, even if they're like 5 years old. It's very interesting. Yeah. So.
But I mean, I'll put it this way, they're barely on sale.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's like a $50 game is down to like $35.
They're calling it the super sale.
Yeah, like, it's not going to be like Steam where it's like, I picked up a game for $2 that's normally like $45. So yeah,
but it's through Tuesday.
SSJ 100 Matt says Prime Day is apparently July 12th through 13th, so everyone is running sales soon to try to get in front of that. That makes sense. Elliot B in chat says, I got Inside on Switch for $2. Well worth it. And that is a good reminder, is that there's not just the Nintendo first party games, but there's a whole lot of indies on the Switch store that oftentimes have a hard time getting spotlighted on that store. So the sales really call attention to certain things there. So good call on that.
The game I wanted to play is actually down to $30, and that was Persona 5 Strikers.
Oh, yeah. It's worth checking out. For sure.
So I think I'm adding it to my list.
Good call. All right. Well, since we're talking about games we're going to be playing, let's talk about games we have been playing in a segment called How Was Your Gaming Week? So Dark Sakura, how was your gaming week? What have you been playing?
Of course, I've been playing Dead by Daylight. I actually have started. Well, I mean, I mentioned this already, but I've been playing Survivor and I haven't hated it. Indeed, it's actually been a lot more fun than I thought it would be, because I've had friends playing with me. I've been playing mostly with Finara, who we've seen in our chat many, many times, who was also my roommate in college and one of my best friends, like family level best friend. And then I've played with you some, Rob, and that mm-hmm. was fun. Yep. And just the other day I played with Craigle, another streamer friend.
And I'm going to be joining on the post show tonight for a little bit after dinner. So I won't be there right away. But after dinner and production of OLR is done, I'll hop in for a little bit.
Well, and I'm sure that given that Fenara is 3 hours ahead of us, she'll want to take a break. So it'll be good. Also, I finished Terranigma, and what a poopy ending. What a poopy ending. I had gotten so into the game, and I was so excited about where I thought the ending was going. And then it's like, no. We were comparing it to The Mist, that movie. Did you see that in the theater?
I did not see it in the theater, but I'm very aware of how they changed the ending from the book. And even Stephen King was like, this is fucked up what you did. I like it.
Well, yeah, but I hated it.
No, I know. A lot of people did.
Because the movie was awesome. It was so good. And then... that's what Terranigma is to me.
If you have no idea, by the way, with The Mist, please don't spoil it for yourself. Just watch the movie and send us an email, participate@orangelaunchradio.com. And I want you to cuss us out.
Then read the book and be mad about it.
I want you to cuss us out about how that movie ends.
And then be mad about it after you read the book. Just saying. So anyway, when I finished that, I could not get my my translated copy of Final Fantasy VI to work. So I started the American Final Fantasy III, and I got a bit of the way through it, right at the start. But I did finally get it patched with a translation, because I own a Japanese copy of it, and I own an American copy of it. So I am well within my rights to play a digital recreation of it.
Sure.
I can legally do so because I own both copies. So I will be starting over on that one this Wednesday for Retro Night. And I'm looking forward to seeing what the differences are. It's been so long since I've played the game that there's so many things that I'm remembering and so many things that are kind of new to me again, just because I didn't remember certain things happening. I mean, this was the game that I basically skipped a week of school for, pretending I had the flu. I've also found some other ROM hacks that do new stories for Final Fantasy VI. Hmm. And I'm sort of thinking about doing them, but I'm also thinking about doing Star Ocean after that, because people have requested it, either that or Emerald Dragon. And then I have to think if I want to play the SNES copy or the Turbo Duo version, or I should say PC Engine Duo, because I do have the original PC Engine version of the game. So I've got some decisions to make, but I've got time, because Final Fantasy VI is something I can take my sweet time with and explore and... see if I can remember all the fun little secrets in it. And of course, I've also been playing Wordscapes. And I think I am fairly close to being at... Oh, gosh, I just hit my lamp. Fairly close to being at level 10,000.
Wow.
Not too far. I love that game. I mean, it's like my perfect... kind of stress relief game, and I did just buy Persona 5, so I'm just saying. Strikers.
We'll be hearing about that next week.
Maybe if I can get my butt over to actually play something. Oh, and I need to get the Delicious Last Course for Cuphead, so I'm gonna do that too.
All right. Well, while Dark Sakura fills up her shopping cart, let's go over to Loki and talk about his gaming week.
It's all Minecraft again. I was very busy this week. I made two videos this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, you were teasing a big premiere last night, right?
Yeah, it was just It was last night that I put out a video. So earlier this week, I finished up my hardcore series. So that was fun. It was very chaotic. And then, of course, put out a new episode of Nerdcraft. Or not Nerdcraft, Channel 64. I'm getting all my SMPs mixed up. So another episode of Channel 64, which I built a giant met for Mega Man. That's my starter base. So it looks awesome. Definitely worth checking out. At least, you know, check out the thumbnail.
Yeah, I was going to say you can kind of see it even in the thumbnail, like the how gigantic this base is in your latest video. I'm trying to see if I can actually see it in the video somewhere. Like, where? Ooh, I think I found it. So, oh, this looks really cool, actually. Hold on. I'm going to show it for those that are watching live on the Voice Geeks Network over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. And that's from Loki's latest video, this gigantic base. For those on the podcast feed, it looks like one of those Mega Man 2 enemies with like the construction hats that spit bullets at you, like faithfully recreated in blocks on top of this really just giant base that Loki's working with. And, you know, I know
that's
Loki
starter base.
Yeah, you talk a lot about Minecraft on this show, but for those that haven't really checked out your YouTube or your, it's because you're really doing a lot with this game, and I mean that in the nice way, not like in the wow he does a lot. No, I mean that in like you're really invested in this game and in this community.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So check that out over at YouTube, Loki_OLR. Awesome. All right.
I watched some of the older videos not too long ago. Mm-hmm. It was quite entertaining.
Yeah. Believe it or not, Loki has some good stuff.
Yeah. At least I try to.
Yeah. No, it's good. I'm really happy that things are picking up and up for you too. So, all right. My gaming week. I had a weird gaming week, I'm going to be the first one to admit. So I've been playing the usual stuff, of course. Final Fantasy 14. I was out doing Pokemon Go today. Nobody told me that collection challenge resulted in a regional. So I'm glad I did it and did some Bluetooth catching today, because then when Panseer showed up, I was like, wait, what? Like that was the giveaway for this? Hold on. Is that the name of that guy? I don't know. Somebody in chat will correct me if I'm wrong. But yes, that was nice. And then playing, you know, a little bit of Ingress. I hit level 16 again for the third time. I don't know if I ever said that on the show, but I hit 16 for the third time in Ingress. And now I'm kind of slowing down on that. Like I only go out and raise havoc if I need to. And then also playing a little bit of Pikmin. Okay, but here's where my week gets weird. So y'all know I have a new computer. So I've been, you know, installing games on it, checking out what's on Game Pass, seeing how games look. And then I was like, I'm going to go back in the vault and play some old games. And I really can't explain this, especially when I well know I have a backlog of new games to play. Like I've been meaning to play Tunic for like 2 months now. Everybody's yelling at me to go back and finish Like a Dragon, especially after this last week in Summer Games Done Quick and all this other stuff. But you know what my brain did? My brain's like, you know what game I want to see on my 4K monitor? Really smooth like butter and playing on the PC. I'm gonna go play Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion. And that's what I played. And I don't mean like, oh, I fired it up and just like checked out the start screen and then no. I went through the whole introduction dungeon. I got out into the world. I went around the town selling stuff. I went to the Umbra dungeon to get the Umbra sword. Like I played a significant chunk of Elder Scrolls 4 Oblivion, and most of my playtime on that game was on the 360 or the One or whatever. So I hadn't done a lot of like mouse and keyboard play with that game. So that was kind of neat to go back and play that. And it looks really pretty. I'm not going to lie. It's like, it's the best this game is ever going to look. It still looks dated, of course, because that game is like 15.
Well, I'm sure you could throw a bunch of mods at it too, and
that's what Alan was saying, is throw mods at it. And then I'm like, well, hold on, because eventually this is going to happen with Skyrim, so we'll get there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then the other game I randomly went back in the archives and started playing. So I was playing Diablo Immortal for a hot minute. Didn't spend any money on it. I didn't like that. That was yes, I've heard all the stories about it. I checked it out, but then I was like, you know, the only thing with Diablo Immortal is that because they didn't design it for the PC, they designed it for a mobile phone. When you play it on PC, it doesn't it doesn't look good because it's running through an Android emulator, I'm pretty sure. So it just looks a little like the graphics could look better. And I was like, you know what? I want to go back and see what Diablo 3 looks like. And boy, did I fall down a rabbit hole playing Diablo 3 season. What the fuck season are we on? 26 of Diablo 3 and I'm leveling a Crusader. Yeah, I've spent hours playing that. So it's funny. Tiger Claw in chat says, it's normal for a person to build a high-end PC to play old games from years ago because those old games are going to run buttery smooth on like the old PC. It's like an old game you used to play that ran like crap on an old PC, and then you revisit it and see that it runs better. Yes. Yes, that is it. Because I have dropped a lot of hours on Diablo 3 in the past. So going back to revisit it now where it's like, ooh, I can play in 4K, like 60 plus frames a second. I don't know if it's capped or what, but it's like the game isn't ever going to look better than this. And I'm like, this is nice, especially because that game is also, I think, hitting its 10-year anniversary. Even though we don't count the first 2 years, that game is still hitting its anniversary. And it's like, that's a pretty old game too, but sorry, not sorry. Like, it's fun to go back and revisit an old friend and be like, you got some work done. You've got your fillers and your facelift. You're looking wonderful. And your wigs. You're looking wonderful. So that was my gaming week. Diablo 3 with wigs. It was great. All right. Yeah, Tiger Claw.
That nose.
What's that?
Girl who did that nose.
Tiger Claw in chat says, it's one of the joys of having a faster computer. Absolutely. Questbuster in chat says, LOL, I've seen a lot of people say, man, I hate what they've done with Diablo Immortal, but now I can get into Diablo 3 instead. It's very that. Like, playing Diablo Immortal made me realize I'm really excited for Diablo 4, and I should just go play Diablo 3. So, for better or for worse, I guess Blizzard got that on me. So, there you go. All right. Let's get into some other gaming news going on throughout the industry. We'll start with Loki on another Microsoft-owned. I mean, I guess Blizzard is soon to be Microsoft-owned, but mm-hmm. Let's talk about one they already own, right, Loki?
Yeah, so apparently there was a report that was put out by Kotaku earlier this month that was talking about Crunch. I mean, everybody's been talking about Crunch at different studios, mm-hmm. claiming that ZeniMax was crunching basically having their employees crunched during the development of Fallout 76 and Skyrim, and talking about, like, you know, that, you know, this is not a really healthy environment for their employees. So of course the ZeniMax or Matt Booty, the head of Xbox Games Studio, said that report was unfair to attribute. Well, first off, it's playing the blame game. So he's saying it's unfair because you're attributing the crunch culture only to Bethesda, which I don't think is true. I mean, if he just had eyes, he would know that there's been dozens of articles that have come out about different companies crunching for different games. Yes, yeah, so mm-hmm. It's not exclusively Bethesda. And also saying, well, it's not fair because they're looking back too far. Right, that was back in 2018 and during Skyrim's development and stuff, but he didn't comment about what's going on now.
I'll give him this crumb. It was before Microsoft owned them. So, you
true,
know,
yes,
I can see why he is saying it's unfair to ask him, or, you know, put it on Microsoft, you know, all this stuff that happened before they were in the picture. And to piggyback on this comment, Phoenix7726 in chat says, I wish Activision was not keeping Kotick on, but, you know, abuse is okay and all, so fuck Activision. I don't disagree with you, and I still have a lot of problems with what's going on at Activision, but I also kind of feel like with the Microsoft purchase, you sort of see the light at the end of the tunnel. Not that Microsoft is a company free of problems. However, you do see things like they are acknowledging unions. They are working, you know, with these concerns and things to try to be at the cutting edge of that. The way Microsoft has been one of the first to step up and make their games more accessible and work with accessibility controllers and things of that sort. The way that, you know, Microsoft has also kind of really tried to eliminate crunch time where they can and so forth. again, I'm not trying to like say, oh, Microsoft is untouchable and they're a company free of wrongdoing. They're not. But I feel like at least Phil Spencer specifically and a lot of the Xbox team as a result is the culture that is trying to listen and do better. And that is important. And I of course, I want to see Bobby Kotick gone. I'm still trying to hold a shred of hope that that might happen and that there's a lot of facade that has to happen until this deal is finalized. Once this deal is finalized, if Kotick is still there, you'll probably hear me bitching a lot more until he's gone. I'm trying to hold out a shred of hope that there's just kind of a hush-hush, shh, let him think what he wants, you know, until Microsoft actually, the deal is signed and everything's done. But I'm really trying to hope and hold out faith that Bobby Kotick's days are numbered, as is that board, because they're rendered irrelevant once Microsoft owns them. So anyway, sorry, not to deviate too much. I know this is a Bethesda story, but I kind of wanted to say like what my current thoughts are on all that. And
certainly I would say, you know, it might be good for them to like reassure like, hey, listen, you know, that may have been what their culture was in the past, but here at Microsoft, we're going to try to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that would have been a better answer. Yeah.
He just mentions that they have anonymous ways to report that to HR or something like that. But, you know, typically even in, you know, we've heard stories like even so much as Activision, you know, that reporting the HR doesn't do anything. HR protects corporations. They don't protect people. So it's I don't know if that's necessarily like a really good approach. It's not really reassuring. But like, yeah, they haven't chose to publicly comment on what the working conditions are. So, you know, we better not find out in 2 years time that, oh, hey, they were crunching. Whoop.
Yeah, you know, it's like, that would be ugly.
Because that'll look pretty bad.
But you know why I don't think they are? Because they delayed Starfield. And I think probably a sign that things have changed, because I don't think old Bethesda would have delayed Starfield.
Probably.
So I think that's a good sign. I would be mad too if I heard this, but I think that's a good sign that's it's turning out for the better. So, all right. Well, moving on, let's talk about kind of a surprise, not surprise announcement of a game release on a new console. That is Phantasy Star Online 2 New Genesis. It's finally coming out for PlayStation 4. I thought that this was pretty much exclusive to Microsoft and PC forever, but I guess it must have been a limited time frame. So PlayStation 4 will get its release of Phantasy Star Online 2 New Genesis on August 31st, 2022. The Japanese version, of course, was released on PS4 a long time ago. It's also on the Nintendo Switch, and nothing has been said about the Nintendo Switch version here. Keep in mind, the Switch version is a cloud-run thing, so that could also be just some of the challenges there is who would host that and pay for it to have that game come out here. But the fact that it's coming out on PlayStation 4 over here is still a pretty big deal. It will be caught up with the Xbox version. The new Kavaris region will be there. The Waker class that was revealed recently, that will all be there, and crossplay with Xbox and PC. So it's kind of nice to see that as well. So of course the game will be free to play as well. So yeah, a lot of people excited about that. I guess that news also coming out of Anime Expo, because there's an art exhibition going on there where there's like concept art and things like that. So cool that Phantasy Star Online 2 is going to be exposed to a new audience. You know, I loved the original, and I tried to get into the sequel, and I tried to get into New Genesis a little bit too, and maybe it's one of those games I need to revisit at some point, but I was almost, they sat on it so long before releasing it here in the U.S., that my issue ended up being I was so overwhelmed when I started Phantasy Star Online 2, I didn't know where to begin. And like, I wasn't sure if I was playing the game right, because it was just so much to do that I was like, is this the right thing to be doing? I know it's a weird approach, but like, it's, you know, that gif of Sabrina the Teenage Witch where like all these plates of pancakes are suddenly coming into frame and she's like, huh? Like, she doesn't know where to begin. That's like me playing Phantasy Star Online 2. That's how I felt. So it's too many pancakes. So, but I you know, now that I have a PC that runs better, that really is one of those games I should go back and revisit and see if I can kind of get into it the second time around. We'll see. All right, moving on. Dark Sakura.
So, you know, the internet can be a very toxic place. We mm-hmm. all know this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, were we not just talking about, like, you know, last week about some of the negativity that we've seen sure. in our early days?
Sure.
Well, the Return to Monkey Island director Ron Gilbert has decided to no longer talk about the game online due to abuse, particularly about the art style. Video Games Chronicle actually did make a report on it that he said on his personal blog that has now actually been completely shut down. I will quote, "The joy of sharing has been driven from me." And it's just, it's very sad to see this. And in fact, I'll go ahead and read the rest of the quote. "I'm shutting down comments. People are being mean and I'm having to delete personal attack comments. It's an amazing game and everyone on the team is very proud of it. Play it or don't play it, but don't ruin it for everyone else. I won't be posting any more about the game. The joy of sharing has been driven from me." And yeah, like there are other people who have come to his defense and the team's defense, basically shaming all of the people who came out and said such horrible, terrible things. He's also on record, and I'll give another quote. "Return to Monkey Island may not be the art style you wanted or were expecting, but it's the art style I wanted." He said the point of the games was always to use state-of-the-art text and art to push the franchise forward. And even if he had been the one to make Monkey Island 3, he wouldn't have made it look like the prior games either. But it is coming to PC and Switch later on this year, possibly other consoles. And it's on the game's website saying that this will be the exciting conclusion to the Monkey Island series. Now, to everyone who was a shit about it, fuck you.
Those people aren't listening to this show.
I know, but I can say whatever fuck I want.
Of course you can, but like those people turned this show off in the first 5 minutes when we were talking about COVID.
I don't care if they're listening or not. They're the garbage of the internet.
No,
I don't care what they think.
Yeah.
But that's just what I would say if they were listening mm-hmm. is fuck you. And I'm sorry no one ever hugged you when you were a child. You know, I'm sorry you had to live in an attic where no one ever loved you. But maybe it's about time to learn some compassion and learn that if you can't say something nice, don't fucking say it at all.
And the art style looks fine to me.
I thought good.
It's okay. I get it. Like, I get the like, for me, it's like, I love the original two Monkey Island games. I didn't necessarily like the Telltale Monkey Island games because the art style was different and the story was a little bit different as well. And I understand people were probably, you know, thinking when they heard, a new Monkey Island game, that it would be done similar to like Thimbleweed Park, where it's in a very similar style to the original like Maniac Mansion Monkey Island type games. But yeah, that may be what you think it should be, but like when you're talking about the creator of the game and this is the art style that they want to go with, well, maybe just give it a chance or something, you know, and let the writing speak for it and stuff. Because, you know, I know that there was an article that it doesn't appear that we're talking about where Miyamoto did not like the appearance of cel-shaded Link. Of, you know, Toon Link, if you will.
That's funny because they're bringing up Wind Waker in our chat room right now and talking about how these kids today don't remember that there was controversy with that.
Well, and that's the thing with Wind Waker. Like, it's funny, like, after playing Wind Waker, it's like, memory. I really like that art style. Like, I thought when I first saw it, I'm like, oh, God, that looks terrible. But then you actually play the game and the world and everything, and that art style really fits with that. And so it's just, I don't know. I think people just need to give it up. It like we they have one trailer for it.
people are quick to react and slow to accept.
Mm-hmm.
And there is like this weird sort of duality to the internet where they have both very short memories and very long memories, and they're selective memories. You know,
they don't have long memories. They have a search bar.
No, some people do. Oh, I remember something that happened on the internet here. Let me go look through the Wayback Machine and see if I can find it and find the receipts on it. You know, but at any rate, I think that people just need to shut up. I mean, there are things that do deserve to be called out, as we will be discussing later. But when someone is so excited and are just doing nothing but positive things and talking about, you know, this game that they're putting their heart and their passion into, when, I mean, there's such a thing as being critical, you know, like a true constructive critique. And then there's such a thing as just being mean. And even the mildest of those were mean. So, you know, what they were doing were personal attacks.
Mm-hmm.
An art direction that someone has integrated into their worldview of this art that they're creating. Basically, you're attacking a fundamental piece of themselves, because everyone puts a little bit of themselves into their art that they make.
Imagine screaming at Vincent van Gogh because you didn't like the way the painting turned out.
Well, a lot of people did scream at Van Gogh, and then he killed himself.
Yeah, I guess that is true. Some things never change. Going to chat for some comments over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. S2100 Matt says, a lot of the milder nasty comments were like, wow, this art style looks like garbage. Budget cuts much? You can't afford more than flash style art? Some folks were attacking them for deleting comments, saying, it's so abhorrent that you're deleting fans' comments. Way not to listen to the community. If you can't listen to criticism, then how can you be in the game industry? Maybe hire a PR person. They're saying this to Rob Gilbert, who is a legend in the industry. And then SJ100 Matt also brings up the Wind Waker.
Everyone, oh, he can do what the fuck that. He wants with it.
That's right. Rob Gilbert can do whatever the fuck he wants. Play his game or don't. But your it's comment on the internet shit. Does nothing. I guess I hope if Ron Gilbert can take anything from this, I hope he knows that at the end of the day, those comments mean nothing. Those people mean nothing. But I at the same time, I really can't fault him for looking at his mentions and just seeing a cesspool. You know, of course, people are morbidly curious. How do you think sometimes we found the ugly comments about our show? Because you're morbidly curious and you search for, oh God, why did I look that up? I didn't need to see that.
Is excited about something that they're creating. They do want to see, want other people to share in with their excitement, and they'll probably check for it. And, you know, he made the mistake of reading the comment section.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, like when I put out my artwork, I want to see what people think about it. If I get like a good critique, you know, I've got a couple of friends who thankfully are also artists and can give me like true critiques and point out, you know, things here and there that I could have done better. And that's what I like to see, just like, oh, hey, that shoulder is just a little bit bigger than what anatomy would say, and I'll be like, oh, okay, you know, that's the kind of thing that I look for when I'm putting artwork. But I also think that there is a difference between being constructive and then being just destructive, and I would delete the destructive comments on my own personal stuff to I guess remove some of the sources of stress and maybe some triggering items. I see nothing wrong with what he did, and I understand why he's stepping away from sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to say right now that if anyone listening to this episode live or in podcast form were among the people who said such mean, destructive things, I would like for you to take a step back and look really hard at what kind of person you are. Just stop and look and ask yourself, is this the kind of person you want to be seen as? Mm-hmm. And if you do want to be seen as a toxic piece of shit online, then I'd rather not know you.
Yeah. And to be very clear, there is a very clear difference between constructive criticism, because you just heard Loki say, I'm not the biggest fan of this, but I get, you know, and that whole thing. But he says, but I, at the end, it's his choice and what he wants to do. That is completely different from what Dark Sakura is talking about with what's going on.
That's a simple statement of opinion.
Yes.
And some people would argue that saying that something looking like garbage is opinion as well. But at the same time, and I even talked about this before, intent versus impact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you want to be constructive or say your opinion and still be tactful about it, you can say something to the effect of, oh, it's not to my taste. We'll see what happens when it comes out.
There you go.
How many times do I say I'm going to reserve judgment for when the thing is out?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's, or just don't say anything. Say it on your own freaking blog or whatever. Put it on your own Twitter.
Yeah, I was just saying, you'll find you save a lot of time by just not saying anything at all.
Yeah. But, you know, some people also want to get in a little bit on, I hate to say it this way, but the witch hunt mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're like, oh, I'm going to say something too and be like all these other people. Or I'm going to get in on the hate because of FOMO.
Or I've got the best zinger and I want to get clicks by, you know, saying this really shitty thing because it's the best zinger.
And then the rest of us, we need to stop supporting it with our silence.
And for the love of God, stop quote tweeting to dunk on it. And I've been guilty of this and I'm trying to do better. Stop quote tweeting to dunk on people. Screenshot it if you must and then dunk on it. Because when you quote tweet it, you're still giving them engagement.
I mean, I will reply to things, but at this point, I'm, you know, now I'm down to the line of blanket statements.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I can't. I don't want to support that kind of behavior. And I think that if more people are willing to stand up and call this bullshit out, and I'm not saying just with this cruelty, toxic environment on the internet, but I'm also saying in real life, if you see somebody of, you know, a disenfranchised group being attacked for something that they can't do anything about, you stand up and you fucking say something. You call people out. You never know who's going to stand with you. Just be willing to be a better person. Because silence is complicity. And that's what I'll say about it.
A lot of people do things for, like the zingers I mentioned, a lot of people do that for attention. And if you make it very clear they're not getting attention, they're getting negativity, you owe it to do that. So, SJ100 Matt in chat says, there's also something to say for some folks that feel they can bully their way into harassing the creator for getting what they want, how they want it. Yeah, I mean,
Mass Effect.
Yeah, again, you're not the artist. Anyway.
Knock it the fuck off.
All right, let's move on to our next story. Loki.
Yes. So we've talked a lot about different Niantic games that are coming out. But now we have the opposite. So Niantic has actually cut projects, and they've also let go more than 80 staff. Apparently part of the projects that have been canceled, the new Transformers game that they're supposed to be putting out.
That's a bummer because they were testing that.
Yeah, which I guess was codenamed Heavy Metal, or I don't know if that was the official game for it. There's a canceled game called Hamlet, which was, I guess, some collaboration between them and Punch Drunk. Blue Sky and Snowball, but I'm not sure if those are codenames or actual game titles.
Hmm.
But yeah, so they've recently decided to stop production on some projects and reduce their workforce by 8% to focus on key priorities.
There was the article that started getting copy pasted from the original Bloomberg report was interesting because the Bloomberg report kind of lumped in Catan and it said Catan and Pikmin Bloom were recent financial disappointments. Those games are very different. Because
Catan never came out.
Catan never came out outside Australia, New Zealand, and the other test regions. So it did come out there for about a year. And like a lot of us were waiting on it. Like, what's the holdup with Catan? And then they canceled it. So that's very different. Pikmin Bloom is out and running, and they're doing community days. And as far as we know, the game is well enough to keep it running. So I sort of would like to know what is the source on Pikmin Bloom not meeting expectations, because I'm not sure there is one. And that got copy pasted into, oh, it's failing. Now, again, I'm only going to defend Niantic so far. I do really love a lot of their products. But the recent changes they've made to Pikmin Bloom are terrible and reek of desperation. And that is that they halved the effectiveness of planting petals in the game. I'm not going to really get into the weeds for those that, you know, because it doesn't make any sense if you haven't played the game. But just basically, they're trying to coax more people into spending money in the shop, which, like, there really isn't a reason to do it. And I feel like they're finally starting to see, like, oh, maybe we could do cosmetics and some other things, and that might work out a little better. But I feel like they're kind of meeting that a little too late. And it's a lot of what a lot of people are saying about Pokemon Go as well. But anyway, my point really is, I still don't know if that necessarily means that Pikmin Bloom is a failure. And I'd like to know where Bloomberg is getting that data. So that's just all. I don't know if it's because, oh, it's not making the Pokemon Go money. It's down in the top 100 grossing games as opposed to the top 10.
So here's where he's getting it from. He's getting it from was an email to staff reviewed by Bloomberg, where the Niantic chief executive, John Hank, was saying that they are facing a time of economic turmoil and they're reducing costs in a variety of areas.
Yeah, but that report called out the Pikmin and Catan, not Hanky. So hey, he wouldn't. A CEO is not going to call out specific projects like that. That would be very demoralizing.
Yeah, probably just taking guesses, I guess, based off of their least popular.
Which I get it. It's not making Pokemon Go money. I think the coin system and everything in that game has been busted since the beginning. I can see why Pikmin Bloom is probably not meeting expectations. It probably isn't, but I'm not sure they have the data to back that up. And nothing is going to make Pokemon Go money. Nothing. Except Pokemon Go. Now, remember everything I said at the top of the show. Pikmin was very incentivizing for me to get to where I am now. So yeah, I'm going to defend that game a little bit. But there, again, it also has its flaws. That's for sure. I did think it was also interesting. All of this news came the day after that announcement that Niantic's making an NBA game.
Weird.
Keep in mind, I played Ingress first since 2014, and Pokemon Go came out, 2016? So, actually, God, I was probably playing Ingress even before that. But anyway, when it was first announced that the makers of Ingress were going to make Pokemon Go, my reaction was, that's fucking weird. And it turned out all right. So I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt, and I understand that if they want to make Pokemon Go money, they've got to find the franchise that has the fan base that's going to do that. And major sports is a pretty good place to start. And the biggest win for Niantic there, it's going to be a different audience. Because I would bet the people that are really into the NBA probably do not have a huge overlap with Pokemon Go. Of course, there's some. Before you speak up in chat, I like both. Of course, there's some. But it is going to draw in a different crowd. I'm just curious, what is the game?
You know what the crowd is. It's the crowd of those people that play sports games that dump tons of money into those, you know, Ultimate Team and I don't know what the equivalent is in NBA 2K. Mm-hmm. Sports fans will just dump money in that stuff. It's a proven...
You're not wrong.
It's a proven thing with like EA. It's what makes that's their bread and butter, and jam, and peanut butter.
E3VL says, do you have to jump in place and pretend shot? Unknown. There's still a lot to kind of figure out because we've seen like three screenshots. It's kind of hard to tell what's going on. But you can guess it will involve going to real world locations, including basketball courts. Now I know why they've been having us categorize in Niantic Wayfarer what a way stop is. They know exactly where all the sports courts are because they've been building that database up for a few years. And then doing something, but it looks like, I don't think you're actually playing basketball. You're doing some type of like team management sort of thing.
They could take the Pokemon Go Pokeball throwing and just use that as a basketball throwing into a hoop.
Yeah. Questbuster in chat says, it feels like they're trying to Netflix their way to another Pokemon Go. Their Harry Potter game sounded like it could have printed money for them, then it shut down. One thing I want to remind people about that Harry Potter game, because again, none of the press seems to remember this. The Harry Potter game was a Portkey game. Who makes all those Harry Potter games? It's WB Warner Brothers Games, like little Harry Potter specific division. That was their game in partnership with Niantic, who I'm sure gave them an early version of the Lightship technology with all the, where everything is in order to make that. So that was a little bit different of a failing. You and I and everybody else in this room know J.K. Rowling's unfortunate fucking mouth had a lot to do with the failure of that game as well, because I'll tell you that completely killed my desire to play it. And I know I'm not the only one. So, but that was a Portkey Games failing in that. I shouldn't even necessarily say it was their fail. If it was anyone's failing, it was J.K. Rowling. She failed. But Portkey just didn't have the game that made money. And I think the reason why is because it wasn't Niantic, it was somebody else. They tried to make a game that was very similar to Pokemon Go when it didn't really fit the franchise. Where that game was best was when it did something different. When you did the gym battles and you were actually like battling with other people and you were drawing the wand patterns to different spells, and you actually had like the DPS tank healer trifecta and all that you didn't see in Pokemon Go, right? That was where that game was its strongest, was when it was trying not to be Pokemon Go. So I think there were just a few decisions in that game. So, Gadats in chat says, maybe I'm a bit of a dingus for thinking it, but wouldn't Niantic do well to partner with similar games to Pokemon? I wonder if titles like Digimon would get general interest. Well, some would argue
more fun.
Some would argue Pikmin is kind of that. It's Nintendo cute monster property. I think at the end of the day, though, they don't want to split the player base. They don't really win by splitting their player base too much. That's why I think NBA, I keep saying NBA Jam, which sadly it's going to be nothing like that. I wish it was. But the NBA game, that's why it's that, because it's a very different fandom, I think. So it'll be interesting to see. And Mike Def says Digimon already has its own AR game. Like maybe it was already, somebody else picked that up. So anyway, it'll be interesting to see because Niantic, don't forget, they still are scheduled to release Peridot, as far as we know. That game was not canceled, but that game also hasn't been released. I should also say somewhere, this is very interesting. So Niantic Campfire sort of came out. Niantic Campfire has been built into Ingress for some time. This is their social network. And I got into Niantic Campfire for a few days. I can't get in now unless I get in through Ingress, which is weird. But if you are able to get into Niantic Campfire through the app, which apparently they have figured out that people who have tickets to Seattle Go Fest are the ones that can get in. They actually now have what fans have been asking for a long time. And that is a map that you can scroll around on your phone and see all of the gyms and what raid is going on in that gym right now. You can't see what color it is or who's defending it, but you can see where all of the raids are anywhere in the world, which I thought was interesting. So I'm very curious to see what the future of Campfire is, because many people are calling it a knockoff of Discord, which, yes, all of the features we've seen so far are a knockoff of Discord. However, that Pokemon Go map, that came out of nowhere. That was something we hadn't seen yet. I'm curious what else we haven't seen. So we'll see. Anyway, let's move on. I'd like to talk about some updates for Twitch.television, the very platform we are broadcasting on right now. A couple of new things that have been teased. The new channel switcher. I've seen this. So this is when you're browsing on Twitch. You now see like random channels on a carousel at the bottom of the screen. And you actually get a 1 minute preview of the channel without having to watch an ad before going into the channel, because many people will flip out because, or tune out because, you know, an ad comes on right away when they load up the stream, even though the broadcaster may not be trying to have that happen. That's why when we're broadcasting live on Twitch, I do forced ads at the beginning when the cats, the little, stay tuned, we're coming up soon, why the cats, when the cats are on before we go live, because that will buy us 30 minutes where that doesn't happen. And people can just jump right into OLR without watching an ad. So the nice thing about the carousel is that you don't have to watch an ad to test a channel. So that's pretty cool, because I do test a lot of channels, especially when drop campaigns are going on. So like when drop campaigns are happening with No Man's Sky, I had to test a lot of channels. And some streamers for No Man's Sky, pretty good. Some streamers for No Man's Sky, harder to watch. So the carousel switcher kind of gives me an opportunity to test the stream without having to sit through a minute of ads before that. So that's nice. The other thing that's coming that's interesting is the guest star feature. A guest star allows guests to join a host in a stream. Apparently it is similar to like Clubhouse, or I think Mixer had this functionality before it went away. Remember good old Beam, Mixer, and then went out to pasture? You actually can include other streamers and viewers in the broadcast with video and audio. So you kind of bring people in and out. So that's interesting that feature, I haven't seen a lot of that feature in use because only a very small audience has it right now. But I'm very curious to see what that brings in, because I am, if we are able to get listeners, that is going to be a new way for us to take calls on this show. And yes, I'm very open to that idea. So we'll see, except the only problem is because of the fact that Dark Sakura and Loki and I are all on Discord, but then the question is, can we do the whole show with Dark Sakura and Loki being on their own streams and coming in here? I don't know. This could change the formula, and I'm not saying we aren't going to do this or that. We're going to do what works for the show. But it's an exciting new idea, that's for sure. So I'm curious to see what comes of this feature. And I think, like Dark Sakura, I know right now this is only available on just chatting streams, but how transformative is this going to be for the Dead by Daylight streaming community if all of the streamers can now co-stream each other's games? Like,
yeah,
that.
Instead of having to use like the third-party like multi-stream thing.
Yeah, which
honestly, oh shit. Sorry, which is honestly a pain in the ass to for someone to watch, especially if you get easily overwhelmed by stuff.
Yeah, which, you know, again, Mixer did it, which we could say, you know, a couple of years ago, but it's nice to see Twitch. Oh, yeah, that was a thing that was kind of neat about Mixer that will be very exciting when that launches here, is if that comes to pass and we can do like Dead by Daylight and stuff. Mike Defton chat says, Rob, you're probably the first person I've heard say something .tv as television. You're getting old. It's actually an in joke from some streamers I watch. You know, it's just like the whole, like when you want to sound old and clueless, you talk about sound drops on my Twitch television. You know, this is what it's just a way of speaking. Or it's like how everybody calls Dead by Daylight something different. Deborah Delight. Or
Delight.
Yeah, Debbie Delight. Deadbeat, dead ass, or something. You know, like this, everybody just calls it something different. So yeah, that always happens. Anyways, so I'll be curious to see what happens with that. Let's move on. Dark Sakura.
So EA did a boo-boo.
What now?
So they made a tweet, a very bad joke, especially given their history. They're basically, you know, taking the piss on single player games. And so it posted, EA posted at 7:33 the other day that they're a 10, but they only like playing single player games. It was playing off a meme that was showing up on TikTok, like, yeah, that's already kind of dead. And one of the Forbes writer, Paul Tassi, this was great. This is a great clapback. Understandable you are unfamiliar with the concept of tens. You made Anthem. Just saying a fact here. Well, that actually, that last one came from Washington Post, from Gene Park on Washington Post. You know, that's a read. That's a read. And then the head of Respawn, Vince Zambella, basically just replied with a facepalm emoji. And then later there was a roast well deserved. We'll take this L because playing single player games actually makes them an 11. I mean, and keep in mind.
Oh, that's so cringe.
And keep in mind that EA's best games, like their top selling games, were The Sims series and Dragon Age Inquisition, which, guess what that was? Single player. And when we had great multiplayer in Mass Effect, they took the servers down, which was terrible. But they're really trying to I think promote more with putting more of the effort into the multiplayer live service games like FIFA, Madden, Apex Legends, and working on more monetization through them. But the other thing that they're doing is that they're making all these investments into other companies and canceling them, like with Visceral Games, which turned into EA Redwood that did Dead Space. Yeah, they're just shutting down studios that have put out good things because they think it's too risky. And again, they're multiplayer is being removed from upcoming games. You know, there was a note that Dragon Age Dreadwolf would have multiplayer, but I think they're kind of going back and forth on that one. And speaking of which, thank God BioWare is still around and that they haven't been shut down by EA like, you know, other companies. But they've also stepped in it when they said that some games would be online only, like when they were going to make Sims 4 online only. And then, I mean, they've...
Well, there was that whole SimCity was online only, and boy, did they eat shit for that.
Yeah. So- but the thing that while these other companies are, you know, really, you know, taking it, you know, because of their own internal misconduct or overtime practices, you know, just abusing their employees, Blizzard is... Not Blizzard, but EA, mm-hmm, is more like, we're going to put this game, you are going to buy it, and then, oh, we're abandoning it. Or, we think this company is going to be great under our hood, abandon.
The tweet just... Go ahead.
I was like, they're just like a deadbeat dad.
The tweet just reeked of, how do you do, fellow kids, with just... you know, trying to play on this meme and just not really thought out. And I want to point out something too, because a very clear difference between this and something we were talking about earlier, we were talking about the other thing that was by Rob Gilbert, a person, and, you know, who is, you know, trying to, you know, do a good thing and make some art here and not okay to get dunked on. EA writing that tweet, a corporation trying to be the next Wendy's or God, now Radio Shack on Twitter. Radio Shack is now like the new bar for corporations trying to do a thing on Twitter.
It makes me sad that my spouse no longer works for them.
Well, there, I think the whole thing is about crypto anyway, so I'm not yeah. sure. Yeah, so I'm kind of like,
but I mean, it was, I bet if he said, oh yeah, I work at Radio Shack, and it would be like, oh, that does the cool tweet, say something clever.
Yeah. Questbuster in chat, I love this comment, says, funny, coming from a company that got its start, oops, it just scrolled off the screen, funny from a company that just got its start from games like Archon and Mule, some of the best games ever made too. I don't think they've made a game that good since then, so oof. So anyway, yeah, EA, just next time don't tweet that.
Just you need better PR people to do your social media.
Or the thing is that tweet didn't even like that tweet just kind of reeked of like written in a boardroom. That was what it is. I think
that's
the difference
is why it's so late coming out too.
Radio Shack is somebody's alt account on their phone who gets high and decides to work. That's cool, but like the EA one, I don't know. I'm reminded of that Saturday Night Live sketch, and I don't think there's been a better sketch recently with the whole God, what was it? It was Harry Styles was the guest, and he was pretending to be a social media intern for what was the company? Was it Hostess or Little Debbie or one of those like snack cakes companies or something like that? And the tweets were like they read to him what he wrote on the Instagram account and all this stuff. It was just, anyway, I'm sorry, I'm not doing this justice, but it was really funny.
Watched Saturday Night Live on purpose since the 90s.
No, this is the one worth watching, is when he's, god damn it, what was somebody in chat, save my ass here, what was the social media brand he was pretending to be? Wasn't it Little Debbie or something like that, like the snack cakes? I don't know. But he was running their Instagram and he was writing all these nasty things like, maybe I'll go out tonight and get railed. Skull, 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 eggplant, eggplant. And he tweeted it like as that. They're like, what did you mean when you said this?
I remember that. That was funny.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you, Sarah Lee. It was Sarah Lee.
I honestly don't think that sounds funny.
It wasn't just that. It's funny. All right. Anyway, let's move on. We have more stories. I think we're to Loki.
Yep. Let's talk some more layoffs again. So this time it is the game engine Unity. And they are deciding to, they're going to be laying off, I guess, I can't remember which percentage it was of it. About slightly more than 200 people, or 4% of its total workforce. Basically, as part of a continued planning process where we regularly assess our resourcing levels against our company's priorities, we decided to realign some of our resources to better drive focus and support for our long-term growth. So yeah, not really sure what that refocus is, but yeah, it's more layoffs.
Joy. Plus Raptor.
All right. Well,
fucking people.
Yeah, we'll see. That's unfortunate. I would have thought that Unity's making a lot of money too. So it's just kind of surprising to me, to be honest. You know, I would think more people are game developing, especially in light of the pandemic and everything. It's just more people taking up Unity and stuff. I don't know. Maybe their plans made them a lot bigger than they ended up being. I don't know. It's weird. That's just one of those where I'm like, I don't understand. How did Unity not meet expectations? I guess they set the bar too high. That's a boardroom's fault. All right. Going on to our next story. I mentioned this earlier in the program because Bobby Blackwolf, who's on live before us, was here and talking about this show from this last week. But it's Summer Games Done Quick. And Summer Games Done Quick raised over, if you can believe it, $3 million for Doctors Without Borders. And, you know, it was nice because it was the first year where it was back in person. You know, so Bobby was talking a little bit about that they were back in person. And they actually met 3 million and barely. They met it right at the end when a bonus of Elden Ring was on the line, and they damn near weren't able to do it because they didn't get the money. But then they did. They raised that $3 million, and then you can just see the people that are in the room just cheering and so happy and really excited that they had hit that $3 million goal there. And you know, that's no small amount of money. And you know, for a lot of the crap that gamers get in this day and age, it's always nice to have a story that talks about, here's a lot of the really, really good stuff that gaming culture does. And, you know, Games Done Quick, whether it's Awesome or Summer, is just a great thing for a lot of reasons. And obviously the money they're raising is one of them. So again, I'll encourage you to go listen to Bobby's show if you want to hear like more about kind of the behind the scenes and all that stuff and what it was like at the event back in person. But a job well done by everyone, all the speedrunners, all the donators, you know, everybody. I also understand that the person who's been running Games Done Quick for some time, Sumichu, is actually departing, or I should say, obviously, it takes a village. It takes a team. It's not all one person. But, you know, she's like the executive, basically the you know, what is the official title? Sorry. There we go. Director of Marketing and Business Development, as well as other roles, said her goodbyes and so forth. So I hate to be the person that's going to step in and fill those shoes, because if you look at everything that Games Done Quick has accomplished in the past 8 years, she set a very high bar. So job well done and retirement well earned for her. And I completely, nobody can fault her. I'm sure it's a lot of pressure and a lot of time to do something like that. So, you know, we all tip our hats. Congrats on making that transition back to in person. Hopefully the next one's in person too. I mean, no one can say for sure at this point, but yeah, job well done and all that good stuff. And you know, again, $3 million for charity. That's awesome. Gamers doing great things for sure. All right.
Definitely yeah, beats a sharp stick in the eye.
What's that?
I said definitely beats a sharp stick in the eye.
Yes. SJ100 Matt says we need more stories like this in this day and age. Yes, we do. We really do. All right, let's get to our next segment and revisit some classic times, shall we?
And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
But once a month, Dark Sakura picks a handheld electronic device. And so, Dark Sakura, what is the classic handheld of the month?
Classic handheld of the month is Bandai Terror House. It was actually in their second series of their handhelds. So basically, to go back into the history of these things, is they were called the Bandai LCD Solar Power. And the very first ones had one screen, little LCD screens. And the games that were out for it were Invaders of the Mummy's Tomb or Nazo no Pyramid, Escape from the Devil's Doom, Tengoku to Jigoku, Sub Attack or Gekisen U-Boat, Breakout, which is a Daidasso, Shark Island, Kyofu no Mujinto, and then Nazo no Chinbotsusen, that only came out in Japan. So the second series is a double panel series. We could even say that this might have been an inspiration for the DS, maybe. But the games that came out were Amazon or Hikyo Amazon, Terror House, the one that I brought up, or Akuryo no Yakata, Frankenstein or Mr. Franken, and Airport Panic, same name in Japan. So as for the people who are watching live, you can see that it's got like the little LCD characters that just sort of pop on and move across. Very Game and Watchy. And this one was considered probably one of the favorites. So a little bit more about this, too, is that like for Terror House, the dual panel on it is actually stacked piece by piece. And And so, by the way, when I meant the DS, I meant like the 3DS, because it has that built-in sort of 3D effect where it uses two panels. And it's, you know, not like the same sort of semi-lenticular one that the DS has, but it uses sort of that same illusion to it. So the series, the LCD Solar Power series, were first made by Bandai in 1982. The double panel series came out, of course, a little bit after that. And they also had more variation in gameplay, and you could progress in two stages. So it was pretty cool that way. And I mean, think about it. These little games are easy to carry around. They're sort of, you know, like I was talking about the Game & Watch as, you know, a relative of it. But I mean, keep in mind too, without this, would we have had our Tamagotchi or Digimon? These certainly led up to it. Yeah. Now, they had other games that were flip cases or had up to three LCDs, but those came out later than that. So this is really going to be kind of like the big one for their early electronic games. Terror House in particular was... I want to say that this was one of the more popular ones that came out. And of course, as far as variations of this particular game, they're stating that between 5,000 and 10,000 variations on this release were made. This is also one of the ones that came out in the United States. Hmm. So there you go.
All right. Your classic handheld of the month. As Questbuster in chat says, Simon Belmont's long-lost adventuring ancestor. Maybe in some ways.
He predates.
I completely understand the comparisons you're making, though, to like the 3DS. It does look like an early, early version of that. It looks like, oh, this is what a 3DS in 1982 would look like. it kind of does. Like, it's kind of neat to think that, whether intentional or not, it almost looks like an early version of that in some ways. So pretty cool.
And one thing I was thinking is that, you know, lenticular photography had existed, you know, I want to say since the 50s or 60s.
What was that thing, the 3D wheel thing that was huge when we were kids? You know, with the little photo disc in there?
Viewmaster.
Yeah. It's kind of it's similar to that, right?
Well, no, not,
maybe not.
A
maybe
little
not.
Bit, yes. Mm-hmm. What I'm thinking of is the souvenir thing that my mom had. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like a quad... pyramid-ish. It expanded out and it had a magnifying glass on one side.
Okay.
And on the inside it had a little picture of, funny enough, of my mother in a bikini. But it was a lenticular image where one was layered over the background, sort of like her part was cut out to stand on top of it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But with the 3DS, it was that full-on, like, you know how you couldn't look at the game from the side? Mm-hmm. Because it was using that same basis as those, you know, pictures that you can turn to the side and make them move or animate. You know, it was something like that. But that technology existed for a while. You know, I would have thought that something like that would be able to be incorporated even as far back as the early 80s. But this is still pretty smart.
Yeah.
You know, pretty smart use of the technology that was available at the time.
Now I'm thinking about the Viewmaster. Like, those are so cool. I wonder where I could find one of those in this day and age. They rebooted them at some point, right?
They did. Now, there was another thing that I had that looked like an old video camera.
Oh.
And you put in these big cartridges. They were by Fisher-Price.
Yep.
And then you would play it. And I had a Daffy Duck one, mm-hmm. I think. And then I had a Tweety one that was the one with Sylvester in the junkyard with the dog.
Well, they're, it's literal film, right? Because like, it's like that, because the Viewmaster with those little wheels you put in there, were those were like pieces of film that would be in there.
having a personal slide projector.
Yeah, yeah.
As I more thought.
Yeah.
But the little camera thing to me was the neatest because then, you know, of course, there's no audio to it. How could there be? Mm-hmm. It's all mechanical. But those things were so cool. And I want to say I thought they tried to re-release those too. And I found mine again when I was an adult, but it had been crushed.
Here's how they did audio, at least on the ViewMaster, is you would have the record, and then the record would say, click to the next frame when you hear the chime. Bling, you know, and it would tell a story, okay, and then bling, and you go to the next thing.
Okay, so let me ask you if you remember this. Because it would, and I know I'm going a bit nostalgic on this one, but do you remember, was it Burger King or McDonald's that had the deal with Gremlins, where you would buy the little picture book and it had the album in the back? And everyone was trying to get them, and there was like the sixth one and the second one where they're short packs, kind of.
I vaguely remember it, except my mom kind of shielded me from the Gremlins stuff. I don't think she liked it.
Well, I went with my friend's big sister to go see it because it was, you know, early PG-13.
Yeah.
I saw it when I was 11, I want to say. Mm-hmm. But at any rate, they had this thing where, you know, with a Happy Meal, you'd get a whole book and a little vinyl with it. Mine warped because someone left them in the back seat of the car. Oh. But you can also unwarp an album pretty easily if it's flimsy enough. So I had one that had wave patterns on them, and we managed to get it flattened back out where it would work.
DDRcoholic in chat, which, hello, great to see you again, even when it's not the 20th anniversary, excited to have you back, says they were also three-dimensional, talking about the ViewMaster, and that's what was so amazing, really. Yes, that's what it was that whole fact that it wasn't just a colorful picture if you were holding it up to the light, but it was three-dimensional as well because, yeah, it had that slightly different left and right photo. So that's what kind of made me think of the stuff Jamie was talking about, even though, yeah, I'm mixing up some things, but hey, trip down memory lane. ViewMaster was great. The I believe the Fisher-Price movie viewer. Yeah, they're talking about that in chat. And there's a link.
There's where you can buy one.
Wow. They still make them to this day.
Well, it was when they were doing the classic toys, because they also had the telephone thingy and the little bubble vacuum thing that had the little plastic balls that would shoot around.
And there's a ViewMaster and similar items, of course.
Uh-huh.
They also did like a they tried to use the ViewMaster name as well for like a mobile hand. It was like, you know how the for a while there, like mobile VR was kind of popular with all those different like Google Cardboard and stuff like that. So there's a lot of companies making really cheap VR goggles almost that you could strap to your phone. Hmm. And ViewMaster did that.
Okay.
You know what's funny is that I just found an eBay auction where they're selling the old cartridges. And so I can see the ones that I have. So I actually had Lonesome Ghosts, which was a Disney one, where Mickey, Donald, and Goofy are ghost hunters. I had the Sylvester and Tweety one, and I had the Roadrunner one.
Wow.
So those were the three that I had now that I'm looking at them.
All right.
There was, yeah, I'm sorry.
It's tripped down memory lane. It's all good. I wish I could remember the cool ViewMasters I had, but it's been so long. Some various Disney ones, I know that. So, all right.
This is great. This makes me so happy.
We should go back to games, though, and talk about some rapid-fire news. Some other headlines around the industry a little quicker. Loki.
You know, this is, with all the crap we give Atari about, like, some of their dumb projects that they kick out, like the VCS and stuff like that, this Atari Anniversary Collection is pretty awesome looking.
This Atari 50? Yeah.
Yes. The Atari 50, it's the anniversary celebration, they say. It's got 90 games included with it, from everything from the 2600 up through the Jaguar, and they even include the Atari Lynx in there as well. And not only does it have all of that, but it's got, you know, different folks talking about the games, kind of like a, almost like a documentary type of thing with it. And they've even created five new games to the collection as well. So Digital Eclipse is putting this together. And yeah, I'm actually kind of looking forward to that.
My only issue with this, because this sounds awesome, is I'm like, God, this is like 15 years past the time they should have done this and reinvented some of their class. Yes. Like, this is long overdue. But you know what? We'll take it. And just the fact that I know Tempest 2000 is in this clip. So the fact that like we're going to get like Jaguar in this as well and just some of those awesome games. This looks really exciting, I got to say. And I don't often say that about Atari like ever so anymore. So this is pretty cool. Wait for it. They say early classics. There it is. That's Tempest 2000 right there. So very cool.
Exciting. I freaking love Tempest 2000.
I know, me too. I'm like, that'll make it.
Super
that'll make
Zapper it, Recharge.
That'll make it worth the money right there. So what else, Loki?
And then along with that, you know, we have a lot of game companies talking about what they're working on. Well, Sucker Punch is going to tell you what they're not working on. And that is, of course, a new game in the Infamous and Sly Cooper franchise. As right now, they said, as our games continue to grow in scale and complexity, they require the full attention of our studios with a focus on our current project. We have no plans to revisit Infamous or Sly Cooper right now. That doesn't mean forever, but just like right now, at least.
Yeah. But games take a while to make.
Yeah. And we had, I think, an Infamous and Sly Cooper game back on PlayStation 4. It hasn't been that long.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Dark Sakura, what do you got for us?
Oh, some Sega Genesis stuff. So there's four Sega Genesis games that were added to Nintendo Switch Online. We have Mega Man the Wily Wars, we have Comic Zone, we have Target Earth, and then dun dun dun, Zero Wing, which had like some of the best music and worst translation ever. Zero Wing is such a fucking good game though. And then that was it for me.
Yep. But yeah, Zero Wing of the Infamous "All Your Base Are Belong to Us" meme, and nobody can remember unless you're a classic gaming connoisseur like Dark Saga, what the actual game looked like. But you can see
The game is fucking great, but the music in it,
mm-hmm.
The music is so good.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, how dare it be that good?
And I am really excited for the Mega Man Wily Wars too. Even though I don't know, some people took issue with the Genesis Collection. Of it, like, because you know it did some things differently, but I just think it's a collection a lot of people kind of forget about, and the fact that it kind of re-looked at Mario 1, 2, and 3 in a similar way that like Mario All-Stars did, where it's like it wasn't that long after the original releases, right? So it's kind of neat. So these are some good releases, that's for sure. I'm excited about that.
Indeed.
Yeah. I still don't have the Nintendo Online Plus or whatever it's called. I still haven't been convinced to upgrade to that, but maybe soon. We'll see. All right. Well, let's check out some releases coming out real soon around the world. So Loki, we'll start in the US.
Yes. So we have a game called Arcadegeddon, which is on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series. Eurokill, the culmination game, and that's going to be on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and PlayStation 5. Matchpoint Tennis Championships on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. And let's see, Ruins Magus on PC. AI, the Summonium Files, Nirvana Initiative on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. Klonoa Fantasy Reverie Series on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series, and then a game called Madison on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. That's it.
traveling to Japan. It's kind of a quiet week on the Nintendo Switch. Really, the only release this week is Klonoa Fantasy Reverie Series, and that is coming out on July 7th. But that is like the only release on the Switch this week. When you go to the PlayStation 5, you get Match Point Tennis Championships is coming out there, as well as that same Klonoa game is also out on the PlayStation 5. But really, that seems to be it for the week. It's a pretty quiet week in Japan, just those few releases. I should point out, though, the PlayStation 4 is also getting those games. So also FIFA 22 gets a price reduction. It goes into the Best Hits collection. But also on the PlayStation 4, there is a game called My Girlfriend is a Mermaid Refine. That is the name of the game. My Girlfriend is a Mermaid?
So Does she lure unwitting sailors to their deaths?
If the game is cool, then yes, but I have a feeling the game is probably not that cool.
I wanna be a siren and lure unsuspecting men to their doom.
DJ Rama S says,
but only specifically old Republican men.
DJ Rama S says probably a visual novel, and I think ding ding ding, that is probably correct. How about the UK, Dar Sakura?
In the UK on the 7th for PlayStation, Xbox, and PC, Match Point Tennis Championship Legends. The rest of these are on the 8th for PlayStation and Switch. We have Arcade Spirits, The New Challengers. For those same two plus Xbox, we have Klonoa Fantasy Reverie Series. And then also on the 8th for PlayStation and Switch, we have Madison. Looks like some sort of horror game.
All right. We have a few more stories for y'all, and then we're going to get to some tweets and emails from last week that we ran out of time for, and then maybe we'll try to squeeze in a call or two, although I don't think we want to have another 3.5-hour show tonight, so we'll take what we have time for, because actually we do have one recorded phone call I want to make sure we get to, and I'll explain why we're doing that in a little bit. But first, we have some more headlines. Loki.
Yes. So, you know, we always say to put your money where your mouth is when it comes to, you know, trying to influence what happens in the game industry. Well, someone took that to heart and apparently invested 5 million yen on Nintendo stock, which was enough to get them invited to the, was it investor board? And once they were there, they were able to ask a question about what's going on with F-Zero, Nintendo. And of course, they gave them basically like, we don't know.
Was that the official comment?
No, the official comment, the translated comment was, it's realistically difficult to develop new titles and remakes, including sequels, for every Nintendo game that people request. But we are very grateful and appreciative of the expectation of our fans have for our games. You know, that's 5 million yen well spent. I probably wouldn't have done that.
I know. It's like, it's better spent than on crypto.
There's that.
True. Yeah.
Anyway,
at least you still have that in shares, so it's still worth that, but it's like, you know, and I guess you could sell that later.
Just to note, for those that are watching live at Twitch, we are showing some B-roll of F-Zero GX from the GameCube, just so you can remember what a fucking good game it was and understand why somebody had to ask this question.
It is such a good game.
And Mike Def says, don't worry about this guy losing money. He's probably going to earn money. Yeah, I mean, that's true. He bought stock. He didn't just throw it in the toilet to get this question. So he'll probably actually end up making money on this, you know, if he can hold it to a point when, you know, Nintendo announces, you know, the release date for Breath of the Wild 2 or something like that. That's for sure. So,
and remember, this is how you get a say in the company.
That is it. I mean, hey, this is a well-played example. All right, I think we're over to Dark Soccer next.
All right, well, we have some news for BioWare. They have hired the writer who worked on Deus Ex and Guardians of the Galaxy from Eidos Montreal, Mary DeMarle, who was a longtime person with Eidos Montreal. is now working with BioWare. She is, I'm trying to double check something on here. The thought that is that she may be with the new Dragon Age or Mass Effect game. But I think it could be a good thing. You know, that both of those games were great, especially Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, the writing for that was just top notch. So I have high hopes. If she's in there for Mass Effect, mm-hmm. I'm down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that Guardians of the Galaxy turned out a lot better than people thought it would. So it's good.
Great.
Yeah. So pretty cool.
Yeah.
All right. Unfortunately, we have some sad news, Loki.
Yes. So unfortunately, this week we lost a very influential content creator by the name of Alex, who went by Technoblade. And he was a content creator for Minecraft, obviously. Very well known for PvP. He did a lot of stuff in Hypixel, had a really, you know, great following, just kind of a wholesome content creator. Unfortunately, he lost a battle with sarcoma and he passed away at the age, I think it was 23.
Yes,
just 23.
That's so sad.
Yeah, so it is very sad. Unfortunately, I didn't never really watch his content. I knew of him through kind of watching stuff, Dream, because he's kind of had like a friendly rivalry with him because they're both kind of, you know, into the PvP stuff and like that. So I was aware of him, but didn't know kind of, you know, the type of content that he made stuff. But yeah, I mean, obviously, everyone's kind of taking it very hard. They've lots of tributes. Mojang actually put a crown on the pig in their like splash screen for the Minecraft launcher, which is very nice because his avatar was kind of this crowned pig, which is kind of cool.
That is a very nice gesture. Yeah,
just very, very you know, sad. Unfortunately, like the last video that was on his channel is actually his dad that was released talking about, you know, him dying and like all the stuff like he wanted to do. Basically, like he wanted to put out a video to kind of tell the fans what was going on, and so he was able to kind of write a short message for his fans and basically just passed away about 8 hours after that. So yeah, very sad.
Yeah, I actually, and I'm not familiar with the content creator because I'm not as embedded in the Minecraft scene, certainly as much as you are, Loki, or, you know, so forth. But I did watch, because it was going around Twitter, I did watch a little bit of that last video, and like, not even knowing the individual, like that last video was very, very impactful. Yeah, it was really, it's just such a young age for that. So yeah. Sad. So yeah, Dark Tosia says, it's always nice to see devs doing that tip of the hat to one of their fans. I think I remember hearing something similar in WoW at one point. Yeah, Warcraft and I think some of the other MMOs, to be fair, have done like a character in the game is like memorialized in game, like as an actual NPC. Like I know I remember an old friend from the Horde House days had a husband who had passed away tragically, and that husband is a Warcraft character. In the Pandaren expansion that you can go visit. And I remember there was an episode of Horde House where we talked about it a little bit and, you know, kind of was an odd bit of comfort where he could go visit him in the virtual space, which is just, so this is very interesting thing that only gaming can really give us, which is very, very interesting. Unfortunately, I have no idea where to get that episode anymore because Horde House doesn't need an archive. It was a great show for its time, but for its time. All right. Anyhow, let's try to end on a little bit more of a lighthearted note and talk about this is, oh boy. And actually, I just have to correct. Rama in chat says probably still on iTunes. No, server's long gone and it has been removed from iTunes and pretty much any up-to-date podcast directory because the MP3s are no longer available. There's that. Oh, Pod Culture says I have the episodes on the server. If you all go find them, then cool. But just please remember the disclaimer I talk about before you go listen to old Orange Lounge Radio about content that doesn't always age gracefully, because that is like double so for Horde House. Again, not ashamed of like the content that we did, because that was a really fun time with my friends, but it's dated. So
we've grown and learned.
Yes, we have. We've all grown and learned. All right. Anyhow, let's talk about some developers that haven't learned, because they are still putting out Smurfs games. And yes, we're going to have a Smurfs cart game that's going to be on the way. This is a follow up to the Smurfs Mission Valif, which is a platform adventure game. The French publisher Microids is going to be making a kart racing game called Smurfs Kart. No, I don't have any footage to show you, and it's probably not really worth looking at anyway. You can choose from such Smurfs as the main one, the one with the chef's hat, Smurfette. I don't know if these are the actual names, but this article is calling them that, and I think it would be funny if those were the names. But I do seem to remember there was like Jokey Smurf and stuff, so I think some of them do have actual names.
Oh my God, Rob, I'm just like now thinking of Teen Girl Squad.
How so?
Cheerleader! What's her so-and-so? What's her face? The ugly one.
So anyway, that game will be coming out, and I'm sure you are all running to go pre-order it right now. Smurfs Kart. Yes, it's a thing. Be ready for it. All right. We're going to move into the next segment, which we're going to do some continued talk and thank yous on the 20-year anniversary. So last week at the end of the show, you may recall that Dark Tetsuya was trying to call us, and he was unable to get through because of some technical issues. And I joked with Dark Tetsuya and I said, why don't you just make a video? Well, guess what? Dark Tetsuya, in fact, made a video. Now, the only unfortunate thing here is, due to the technical restrictions, my co-hosts are not going to be able to hear the video. They'll be able to see it, but they can't hear it. So I'm really sorry, folks. But if I were to turn on the audio, it causes a feedback loop. That is a issue I have not been able to figure out yet. Although I'm going to play it here. You guys actually have the link in the show roll if you want to see it. But I will play it here and then we'll talk about it. So let me, because I'm still trying to set up behind the scenes here. Let me bring it up. And we're going to hear Dark Tetsuya giving some feedback and some memories. Remember, Dark Tetsuya has been here since episode 1. So let's get to this.
Hey, what's up? It's Dark Tetsuya. So yeah, the Discord call last Sunday was a bit of a disaster. Fortunately, Rob gave me the okay to just record something, so here I am. Man, I'm still kind of in shock that we just celebrated 20 years of doing our little internet radio thing turned podcast. Feels like just yesterday I was sitting down at the computer that fateful Sunday night to listen to their first episode. I doubt any of us imagined we would still be here 2 decades later. Anyway, I hope that little surprise from last Sunday was a hit with the longtime listeners. Or heck, even anyone, any of the newcomers that might be curious, what was the show like back in the day? So now you can hear that one for yourself. I was happy to be able to resurrect the archive for those fans that were curious.
For the record,
seeing
it was a mess.
Reactions to all that, it definitely made my night. And y'all don't even want to know how many hours that repair job on episode 2 took, but after they did the revisit of the first episode back in 2019, yeah. Or no, it was 2020, my bad. 2021.
Yeah, it was last year.
What is time anymore, all right?
Yep.
Anyway, I knew I had to fix it before the 20th, so. And I guess it turns out that bowling alley from our first story, they'd finally torn it down a couple of years ago, so. Yeah, that. I guess we'll have the memories on that one.
Rest and piss.
As for my other favorite memories, I guess I have 3 of them. Of course, the shenanigans during episode 69 where we busted out Karaoke Revolution and just... And everybody sang. That was a wild time. Poor Loki, though. I still feel kind of bad. He did not want to do it. He was just not into it. But...
Okay. I have to pause here. So Dark Tetsuya brought up, because I know you can't hear Loki, he's going through his favorite moments in the show's history. And of course, you know, a person that's been listening since episode one brought up episode 69 when you did Karaoke Revolution and did your own rendition of I'm Going Out or whatever the song was called originally. But you changed the lyrics. And again, it's one of those things that maybe questionably his age, but you know what? I'm gonna give you a pass because it was funny, Loki. Okay, so if you did a song,
I don't think it was that funny.
But the listeners thought it was great. So, but he's saying Loki didn't want to do it. He didn't want to do it. So can we? Did you want to sing?
I did not want to sing.
Okay. I'm glad we got that settled. Okay, let me go back to the special message here from Dark Tetsuya.
I don't know. It was still kind of a fun time, so. And then there was that time, it was one of our earliest episodes. We had barely gotten into the double digits. It was 10 and a half because it was a pre-taped thing at the arcade there, Roseville Golfland. So we thought we'd go down there, record the episode, and, you know, just walk around, play some of the games and all that. Was going okay for a while, but then the management stopped us, so then we had to wait and find out, were we going to get in trouble? Was management going to kick us out? We'd have to go to dinner early. Luckily, it turned out they just said, you guys can stay, but you got to go back upstairs. So we decided to we'll just take it and go back upstairs, finish out the show. So it inspired me to do a clip show.
So for those that weren't here for episode 10 and a half recorded live at Roseville Golfland, well, not live. No, not live. It was recorded and then played later. The management almost shut us down. And that was really funny because I remember lying and saying that we were doing a project for high school or something. And they were like, what school? And I named because I went to school in Roseville. So I knew the high schools there. And so they were kind of giving us like a face, like, and I'm sure it was the whole, you look too old to be in high school. Keep in mind, I was 24 at the time, so I maybe could pass a little better. It was a funny moment when the show almost got stopped in its tracks at Golfland. But yeah, they didn't end up throwing us out. I mean, because like, what were they gonna do? Call the police? Like, we would have been out of there before the police ever got there. But that was true guerrilla.
You don't get paid
podcasting.
Enough to care.
That's right. That's ultimately what it is at the end of the day. They don't get paid enough to care. Let Dark Tetsuya finish his video message here. Sorry, Dark Soccer, I keep cutting in. But lovely hair. All right. Let me go back to the...
I got tired of the length of the other wig.
I understand. Okay, here's the last minute or so of the message.
Because Rob had made the comment about it. I just was something I'd always had in the back of my mind. It's like, oh, I got to do that. So yeah, that was kind of funny. And I'm probably biased with the number one, but back in 2017, it was January, and I had gotten to come down and see the one who'd be my eventual wife, Michigan's. So we were hanging out, and it was that Nintendo the Direct thing announcing the Switch and some of the upcoming games. So we called in. Give our thoughts on that and talk about the new Zelda coming out, saying how we couldn't wait to get a hold of that. I think we also talked a bit about that Shadowrun game because she was pretty into it. So
that sounds right. I remember.
But I don't know. That was a pretty happy memory for us, so that we could share that with the show. Anyway, thanks for giving me the chance to get my take on our anniversary, us turning 20 years old. Happy anniversary to y'all, and I'll send it back to you guys. Y'all. So I will see you in chat.
All right. Thank you so much, Dark Tetsuya, for sending that in. Appreciate it. And the little walk down memory lane. Even if you are a little biased in your number one answer there, but I completely understand why. And that would be when him and Mish called into the show together. I think before they kind of, you know, got together. So pretty cool, especially hearing from somebody who was there the very first night, walking down some old memories. SG100 Matt mentions, I went back and read through a lot of the forums a week or so ago, and wow, that was a trip down memory lane as well. That's true. Our website really is frozen in time since 2000 something. So there's a lot of, I bet there's some great forum posts there. Some people that we haven't heard from in a very long time. That should be a fun read sometime. I need to do that as well. So cool. All right. Let's continue. I think we have some emails that also speak to the anniversary. So let me kick it over to Dark Sakura, who opens up our mailbag, participate@orangeloungeradio.com, and read some emails for us.
All right. So I'm going to go in date order of reception. So this one comes from Name and Lights. Congratulations on 20 years. I have been a listener since the All Games days, so I am not a day one OLR listener. I'm not able to listen to the show live because of the day and time you are on, but have been a podcast listener since I found this show. You have had so many great moments over the last 20 years. I will always remember this show in 2013 when I called in after my wife passed away. It was a really rough time for me, and I nearly lost everything. I will never forget the support I got. Things did get better, and I am in a great place now. I have messaged you all offline for things over the years and are very easy to talk to. I am on the East Coast, so the chance of meeting any of you in person is very hard, but maybe someday. I have met Exifer on a trip to North Carolina. Without OLR, that would not have happened. Thanks for all the years. I won't say here's to 20 more because that number is getting too big and I will be way too old. I will say I will be a listener to OLR until the day you do close your doors and shut down the feed. Can I cry?
If you want to. It's your party. You can cry if you want to. It's a very sweet email. I actually recall that episode that you mentioned because it was very tricky for me trying to navigate that. And I mean that just in the way of I wanted you to have a place where you could talk about it openly. But at the same time, I was just, you know, a little worried like, oh, gosh, is he putting too much of that emotion and rawness out there? But at the same time, I think sometimes we all need a space to vent and a place to do that. And I'm glad you were able to do that. And I completely, while I can't say, you know, I understand what, you know, I'm glad we were able to give you that space, to process that. And I'm glad that you've made some great friendships through the show as well. So it's great having you here, and thank you so much for, being a part of the show and the legacy of the show.
And I am, by the way, saving, these emails as PDFs for something I still want to work on.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on to the next one is from Zeba. Hello. I can't believe it's been 20 years. I remember my first day like it was yesterday. It was around 2009. I was searching for a new video game music shoutcast radio station because my original one I was listening to stopped working. I came across OLR's website and started listening to the 24/7 stream. I was happy to find out that the stream was not only VGM, but other geeky songs too. I made my way to the IRC room and said how happy I was to find a new Shoutcast radio station. Someone in chat, I don't remember who, told me that I should come back on Sunday night for a live show. I don't remember the exact episode I started on. However, I do have so many fond memories of the years I've been listening. All those times Rob pressed the wrong button and Holic and the FUs of the Week music would play. And the Laughing Ferret, the Vuvuzela, all the times Dark Sakura would say, rah, 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 rah. All the cage match. Rob!
What?
Nothing. All the cage matches and listless, all of Loki's rants, President Cat, all of the food tangents, and probably so much more that I can't think of off the top of my head. I'm so happy that I was able to meet Rob, Bobby Blackwolf, and some listeners in real life. You have made a great community over the years. Even though I cannot stay for the live show most of the time, I'm glad that I can still listen to the podcast the next day while I work. Here's to the next 20 years. Congrats, Zeba.
So great to hear from you, Zeba. And yeah, I met you at MAGFest, and it was great. I'm so glad we got to meet up. And You probably had told me that you found the station the way you did, but honestly, I forgot. And hearing it again just kind of makes me go, oh, like just hearing the ways that people kind of discover you is very interesting. And then it kind of, you know, I know you've also talked a lot about like OC Remix and that type of stuff to me and helped, you know, me discover stuff over there. So it's neat how that all comes full circle. So that's awesome. Well, thank you for being a part of our community all these years.
Indeed. Last email, which is also one from earlier today. Hi, Rob, Jamie, and Loki. Happy post 20th. Normally I'd say happy 4th, but given the state of this country, is it really happy?
No.
Is it though?
No.
Anyway, I wanted to say a couple of things that I could not during the 2-minute countdown. One, last week wasn't just OLR's 20th anniversary and your birthday, but it was also the birthday of my first nephew. A close friend of mine who was like a sister to me, I even call her my sister, gave birth to a bouncing baby boy named Alex at 6:46 a.m. Good things happen in threes, I'll tell ya. Two, I know you have said from time to time that the show gets political. I digress. Can you really call it political when the views you bring up, we all agree on what you say? Even if we don't, everyone in the OL Army is adult enough to have a civil conversation about it. It only gets political when we are screaming at each other about it. No, it's still politics. We just have civil political conversations.
Yeah.
Yeah. The topic is political.
Yeah. I get the compliment that's buried in there. I do. But yeah, I think what Jamie said is right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and congrats, by the way, about your nephew.
Yeah, for sure.
So three, I was inspired by Dark Tetsuya to do something last week. Unfortunately, I was not able to finish it in time due to various things popping up at home. Don't worry, I am okay, but you know how it is when your hobbies get the best of you. I'd like to present the Orange Lounge Radio 20th anniversary ending credits. What?
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, I'm working on a 16-bit version if you don't want to use the end theme. I hope you like it, like the subtle surprises I put in there.
So stay tuned. At the end of the show tonight, we have a brand new outro. So stay tuned.
Totally. I hope you like, because I had fun working on it. Well, that's it. Take care. And to quote VXJasonXV, see you next week. And that's from DJ Ranma S.
You have to make sure you also say it the way that Jason says it.
That's what
See
I did.
See you next week. No, I know you did, but I'm telling everybody else out there, when you say that, make sure you're saying it the way Jason says it, and see you next week. You know, you have to make sure you, in that very, I know we don't use the Chrono Trigger music anymore, but I still think of it when I hear, see you next week. It's very, very nice with that, so.
And
Bobby is commenting he saw that all going down, meaning the new intro coming in and out during the last. It was actually because it all Dropbox is how we all pass files to each other, and Bobby was live and Dropbox is like downloading the new outro not once but twice because Rama had to fix something.
This is why I don't have my Dropbox sync. I go to the website and get it when I want it.
That's the sync is so damn convenient though. And it like to be fair, that never happens, but like once in 100 episodes, like something will be moved at the last minute.
Given the amount of stuff that I do through various cloud services.
Well, then that's different. That's different.
Yeah. I keep them all online because I basically, when I'm not working, I'm streaming.
Yeah.
I'm like Rita in Power Rangers. Make my channel grow!
Going to chat, SSGO 100 Matt, and thank you for the email, Rama. SSGO 100 Matt in chat says, I listened to the 20th anniversary show afterwards, and it brought back so many good memories. I'm a little sad I missed it live, but the memories were wonderful to hear. I'm so happy to be part of this wonderful community for so long. From all the in-jokes over the years, peep jousting, Ultracade kicking, President Cat, and of course, Lokius Tingle. From all the various homes, Live 365, all games, from all the in-person meetups, thank you for the memories and the fun times. Well, thank you for the sweet message. Appreciate it. I also want to, I don't
remember, Tingle is now officially in our album art.
That is true. I want to get to some tweets because I didn't read the tweets last week. I don't usually read all the tweets unless like one, like I'm like, oh, we have to talk about this. But there were a lot of very sweet things written on Twitter. So I just want to get to some of these. I may not get to them all because unfortunately our mentions can be kind of a mess. So if I skipped you, I'm sorry, but please know it was seen and I appreciate all the notes. But I do want to say at Blue Swim tweeted, happy 20th anniversary to the podcast that made me want to become a podcaster, OLR. I remember listening to episodes on my Sony Minidisc player back around 2005, so I've been there for most of those two decades. Congrats, Dark Sakura, Rob, and Loki. On the Minidisc player? So does that mean you were burning episodes to a disc to listen? I know there were people that did that. They would download the MP3, then burn it to a disc and listen to it on the disc.
Any discs were rewritable.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, it's more like a zip drive, but smaller.
Yeah. That was, and honestly, the mini disc format was a really good format, but it went the same direction that the Betamax did. Great technology, superior format. No one wanted to adopt it.
Yeah.
Like memory stick.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the next one is a Twitter thread. So it's three tweets I have to read. So it's a little long, but it's great. Garth the Wolf tweeted and said, a huge congrats to OLR and their 20th anniversary of being a gaming podcast live show. I've been listening to them most of my life when I discovered them off a DDR forum back in junior high. I just want to say I'm pretty sure he's like in his 30s now, but I'm
going
to just...
I have a child going into junior high.
Hey, my cat is old enough to be a fifth grader, I think.
And DDR forum, shout out to DDR Freak. It's okay to call out DDR Freak by name. Rest in peace. All right. I watched them evolve.
There's a mod there, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, he did just say DDR forum. To be fair, it could have been like Bamani style or DDR spot or one of those other sites. Yeah, it could have been. It could have, you know. Yeah. There were other forums. Anyway, I watched them evolve as a show from Live365 to All Games, then VOG and Twitch. They're more than just a podcast I look forward to hearing every week. The hosts of the show have legitimately given me advice on growing up as a young, confused gay kid who is afraid of not being accepted. They didn't need to do that, but they did. They use their show to elevate the voices of others in the gaming community in the best way possible. They treat their listeners like family and won't shy away from touchy subjects that need to be talked about. I'll just refer to the opening of our 20th anniversary episode. Here's to 20 more years. Yes, 20. Love y'all with a heart emoji. Thank you so much for that. That is really, really kind. Thank you. Let's see. Going back to why does Twitter default to the wrong view? Okay. Sterlock. Man, I can't believe OLR is turning 20. I've been listening since 2007. And while I'm not as active as I used to be and mostly lurk now, I still love them. Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that. And you know what? I never liked this tweet. So there, I'm going to like that tweet. And now you're going to see that. Like, why did OLR like this tweet like 2 weeks later? Well, because I just realized I forgot to heart it. Dungeon Buster says, happy anniversary, OLR, from the days of Side Talk and Engage, the rise of streaming, and the arrival of achievements on through to the present. For 20 years, these friends continue to share fun insights on generations of games and hardware. To the future and beyond. And there's a lovely tweet, or there's a lovely picture that goes with this that I think maybe ties into the Engage comment. Let me show you that there. There's the picture that goes with that. So a lovely cat listening to our show there on a Game Boy Advance, which I'm not even sure is possible. Okay. Let's see. And then Pod Culture said, OLR turns 20. If you like fun and video games, is the podcast to listen to. They had a huge influence on the run of Pod Culture. Let's see, other tweets here. Infendo Justin tweeted and said, I'm sad that I've not had the opportunity to listen to OLR in years, but it has always been an amazing podcast made by amazing people, and I can only hope that the current run of Infendo Radio lasts half as long. Congrats, Jamie, Rob, and Loki. And then some feedback after the podcast went up. Knight of Dorks, who's actually an IRL friend of ours who was there at Golfland back in the old days, tweeted us and said, Hey, y'all, listening to last night's show, and I wanted to say how proud I am of you and what you do. Much love, and miss seeing y'all every week at RVGL. Thank you for the tweet. It's very nice. But are you missing much by not going to RVGL? Because I don't think you are. Like, it isn't what you remember anymore. It's
it's very much. Scandia the other day, and then I was like, someday. There's probably nothing for us at Scandia anymore either.
Mm-hmm. Having gone to Scandia not that long ago, yeah, the only thing, it's less crowded than I remember it. And I swear that, like, shooting gallery thing that they had there is much smaller than I remember it being. But, yeah, it's different now. They have roller coasters.
They have a roller coaster?
They have a roller coaster.
Like a kiddie, like, one, or like a loud mouse or something?
It's, I don't know what it's necessary. It's like the Goofy Flight School. I don't know what
they have a wild mouse.
Yeah, I think that's what it's called. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I've been watching a lot of things about roller coasters lately, like especially like the physics behind them, because, you know, I get on random tangents of things that interest me. And I have now learned what different kinds of roller coasters are called, from super loopers to the wild mouse model to all kinds of things.
Yeah, I was taking the kids there for a little bit, and they have a bunch of, like, different, like, carnival rides and stuff like that. It's just kind of like a weird hodgepodge of things.
I might have to go then, although I'm not going on the Scandia Screamer out of spite. that and mortal fear for my life.
I want to get a couple other chat comments here, and then I see we have a caller who didn't get in last week in the green room, and I absolutely would like to hear from this person, so I'm going to get to that. But first, a couple comments from chat. Phoenix7726 says, OLR is a lot of the reason I could tell that Gamergate was horseshit when it happened, because you all were talking about actual ethics in games journalism forever, and you showed me what that actually looks like. Thank you. That's actually quite a compliment, because, you know, that whole scenario was a mess, to put it extremely simply and lightly. I'm glad that we could kind of help people sort right from wrong in that situation. That actually really does mean a lot. And then there were a couple comments about round one as opposed to Roseville Golfland. Guess what? I actually was at the Roseville Galleria yesterday, because we happened to be going through the area. My husband and I have to get our wedding rings resized. I think I might have mentioned this on the show a couple weeks ago. My wedding ring straight up fell off in the shower and almost went down the drain because of the weight loss. So I actually, I actually went down a ring size, it turns out, I found out. So the place we got our rings happens to be over by the Galleria. So we went there, and still not open. So even though they said round one was going to be the spring and then June 2022. Nope, somebody lied to us, because I was there on July 2nd and it still wasn't open. And there's still just the fake wall up that you can't even see through it. Like, I can't see what they're doing in there, because they have like a fake wall up and it just says coming 2022. The movie theater upstairs is hopping and running, though, because that used to be Sears. So that it used to be a two-story Sears. So now the top story is Cinemark something, and the bottom floor is going to be round one.
You would think that, like, the top story would be round one and the bottom story would be, you know, the movie theater.
Not with a bowling alley. You don't want that above.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Think about it, no, you don't want that above the movie theater.
True.
Yeah. Plus, the shaking of the movie theater base would, like, knock the bins over. So it probably wouldn't work. All right. But I'm excited to check out that round one whenever they actually fucking open. Anyway, we have a longtime listener and participant of our show, and somebody who the show would not be possible without in our green room. And I'm definitely bringing this person on the show. So let's get to the phones. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
Well, I guess with that lead in I got not terribly long ago, I have to say, see you next week.
No, see you this week.
See you this week. See you right frickin' now.
Hey, Jason, it's great to hear from you. What's on your mind, my friend?
Well, you said you didn't want another 3.5 hour show. How about I bring up a topic that'll take us to like 4.5 to 5 hours?
Okay, sure. Do your worst.
No, I absolutely wouldn't. I rewrote the intro at least 3 or 4 times on figuring out how exactly how to present the point that I was making, and also cutting out a lot of my commentary because that doesn't lend itself to 30 seconds particularly well.
But you do a fabulous job with those intros, and I know you rewrite them often because I have the text messages to back that up. You always do it. You always come out winning in the end.
Thank you very much for that. I think that crunch culture already has been, but is going to, is officially a evergreen, actually, I think probably better said as a wedge issue, to use the correct political term. It is the modern political wedge issue of gaming. When is crunch culture okay?
When you're talking about the cereal, Captain Crunch.
Occasionally, sparingly, and when people want to do it because they want the money.
Yeah, so in the intro, I dropped in the I dropped in Matt Booty saying, putting the emphasis on the wrong details. I agree with unionization. I agree that complaints are no doubt substantiated. But I also think that Booty's deflection of it was all correct. But there's another, there is one key word that at least was quoted in the article. You know, I didn't go deeper into the source, just for my own purposes of reading at the time. He used the word bullying. And that's really understated in crunch culture, because especially in particular, like, I'm reasonably certain Rockstar, when they were talking, when they had their retrospective on Red Dead Redemption 2, every successful game talks about the crunch that developers put in to finishing the product. And I consider myself, up until a couple of years ago, for a couple significant reasons, I consider myself all in on crunching, and I am happy to do it. And I understand other people who want to put in their time and get the hell out because they want they have their family they have to attend to, or because they want extracurriculars that aren't work, or because they have a life outside of work. You think about the whole thing broadly, the fact that crunch culture is frequently discussed in Japanese cultures, and not even remotely to the same extent, not as prevalently in America. And like there was the Google engineer that in San Francisco that didn't have a house and just bought a van, a moving truck, something like that, and slept in the parking lot and could go back into work to use whatever facilities he needed. Like, campuses, all of this stuff that you would call crunch exists everywhere, some by choice, some not. And the problem is the objective problem is bullying forced over time, etc. The subjective problem is, oh, if I don't do this, I'm going to be out of a job. Do they feel that? Was it implied? Is it their own their own hang-ups from previous jobs, something like that? Like, it's so unfortunate that all of those possibilities exist, but depending on who presents it, it's going to be, and the personal, the belief of the person reading the article, that it's only ever going to be the one thing to them and not the everything.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do moving forward, saying that, you know, some people are going to want to crunch, especially if like overtime pay is involved. You know, some people want the money, they want to do it, but not everybody does. So
yeah,
where do we find the
or
answer?
Or
you know, for a variety of reasons, right? So I guess what is the answer, and do we think the game industry is moving to that? Cuz I feel like the game industry is relenting to that pressure, because you see a willingness for games to be delayed that you didn't see before, but I don't see it from every company. And this is an interesting, this is the other part. This is the interesting, really weird pro about the part that everybody hates, which is all of these smaller companies are getting eaten up by, and not even small companies, are getting eaten up by larger companies. Microsoft can delay Starfield because Microsoft has the budget and the bandwidth to be able to do it. A lot of studios kind of don't. It's like if they miss the holiday, they're not going to make the money back on the game, and it's all, you know, it's all downhill from there. Although I would argue, I think the last several years have shown us you do not need to release a game in the holiday period to set, like, I think that whole like timed release thing is really a relic of the past, because the same thing is true of movies. Yeah, movies do, they still make a little more in the summer and they do a little more around the holiday. That we see movies released in February, March that make tons of money. So and same thing with games. Games are released all throughout the year. The Switch broke the rules by not releasing for the holidays and still sold a ton. So I feel like some of the rules about when you have to release a game are changing. And if the appropriate amount of planning goes into something, then you can try to avoid crunch.
To follow that on would lead me into a topic that could double the length of the show already. And you're using a few key words that you are correct, all except for the definitive nature of it. Releasing at the right time of the year is not going to guarantee you a success. There is no one way to do any given thing.
For sure.
There are reasons why things happen predominantly. Game releases on Wednesday, movie releases on Tuesday, I think it is. There are kind of these societal or situational rules that you go by that might have specific lead-ins. You know, a game has to certify 2 months before for validation, Gold Master, shipping physical copies, which is less important these days, producing as many physical copies to get out to stores. And yes, all of that is changing for the digital distribution world, streaming of movies. The fact that movies are big titles are day one on a streaming service is, you want to talk about a massive shift, a seismic shift in media? Whoa. So you're saying what is the answer, and I started this by saying that this issue is a wedge issue, and I said that very deliberately because wedge issues don't get resolved, and they're always the driving force for the, you know, are you team this or are you team that? There is no the answer. People need to do what they need to do to protect themselves. I am in favor of unionization. It's an interesting topic for me to think about my own role, tiny little bit different, but the unionization initiatives I've seen in the news are a good thing. When I think about unions that I don't like, my ex's dad was an air traffic controller and also led his union. I don't actually remember what the correct title is, but like, and there's, not going to stray too far into it, but like police unions that protect bad policemen. Sports fans probably know this a little bit with Angel, I don't remember his last name, and the MLB. Mm-hmm. Like we can point to all the issues where unionization isn't good, and those are the exceptions in a big good union. It's gonna happen, but I do think that more AAA billions of dollars of profit jobs and roles need to unionize, and it will just be another point in the story of a given studio's history and what have you.
Yeah, I it's going to be very interesting across the next few years to see, especially now that we know that, you know, Microsoft, one of the big, you know, Pac-Men that are eating up all the other, you know, companies, is kind of saying they're, you know, open to the union thing and, you know, going to honor all these agreements that are coming up as a result of, you know, Bobby Kotick's failures at Activision. So it's going to be, going to be interesting to see what develops the next few years. I do think that is a trend that's going to continue. I think, and we said that back when these Activision things first happened, this union thing's going to get bigger and bigger. And I do think it is. So
whenever I think of the future, I like making my predictions because I like to have fun with it. But the guarantee of the future is that things are going to expand and things are going to retract. Activision, for fuck's sake, is no longer its own company, assuming the deal goes through, Microsoft acquires them, so on and so forth. Like, to lose somebody that is tenured to, how many years ago is it? 40? To lose a tenure of a top-level player for this long is not unprecedented, but it happens. Yeah, like, what's going to happen? Things are going to change. Going to get bigger, going to get smaller, going to merge, going to split. Mobels broke up. They're under... Yep. They're all under again.
It will always be a cycle, because then the people that get fed up with the big corporate world, whatever it is, go start their small indie studio and end up making the next Minecraft or Five Nights.
The process of getting to that.
Oh, sorry.
But then those happen.
Yeah.
Minecraft happens. Five Nights at Freddy's happens. Undertale happens. Yeah, everything. My favorite quote, like the quote that really instilled this in me, Secret of Mana, SNES, time flows like a river and history repeats.
I think we'll end on that note, Jason. Thank you so much for the insight, and thank you for the call tonight. And thanks again for hitting 20 years with us. Appreciate it.
To another 20 years. See you next week.
All right. Okay. We're going to sneak in one more call here, but I do want to try to wrap up the show by 9 o'clock. So I'm going to try.
I honestly need to go ahead and drop out because people are waiting for me.
Oh, okay. Do you have a final thought for us tonight?
I like pie.
All right. Enjoy stuff and things.
Sorry about it.
No, you're fine. Take care.
Later, taters.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, let me get to another call here. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
This is YYR.
Hi, are you calling us from a cell connection?
No, I'm calling you from the exact same. Can you?
So you're breaking up really bad for some weird reason. So I'm gonna try to reconnect. Why don't you do me a favor? Reboot Discord and we'll try again real quick.
Cool.
All right. We'll just give that a minute there. When I see him pop,
it's
back
laid back robot.
Yeah, it sounds like it's like a slow connection or something. That's the weird thing about it. So yeah, and I'm like, why would he change? It's like 11:53 at night over there. Why would he leave home anyway? All right, we'll try to bring him back on in a minute here when I see he's back in the green room. Otherwise, let me quickly check in. Loki, do you have any last minute stories for us tonight?
Not a whole ton. There was some Axis game announcements at Anime Expo. So they announced 7 different games, including Inescapable, which is it's a game from Dreamloop Games. I guess it's like a social survival game where you're on like a reality television show. So that's kind of interesting.
Let me bring back my YYR. Let me see if this works now. All right, take 2. Let's try this again. Hi, you're on Orange Lounge Radio. Who's this?
You're next week.
All right, much better. Hi, how are you?
Oh, not so bad. Now that I'm apparently not a robot.
Yeah, that was weird.
But at any rate, hi, how's it going?
Hi, good. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, actually, this is dating back a few weeks. This is something that I was catching up on some older episodes of the show before the 20th anniversary show, but this was obviously not something I was going to bring up last week, even if I had the time, because although it is a bit of a throwback, because I did not expect that you guys would be talking about bar versus no bar in the year 2022. That was about the last thing I expected. But yeah, lo and behold, it was a topic a few weeks back. Actually, it stemmed as a response from, I think, one of the emails that I sent in. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to throw in my take on that. Because there was a strong opinion, although that was from someone who is no longer connected, unfortunately. But and I'll preface it with, you know, everyone should enjoy the game the way that they enjoy most.
And remember what I said about the culture issue of West Coast versus East Coast, which I really, I really do think is a bigger part of that than I think we're maybe willing to give credit for. Like, not to toot my own horn, but I really think the arcade culture of where you learn to play the game factors huge into that. But go ahead. I do want to hear your take. Go ahead.
Sure. So I used to actually be one of those 1X, no bar, no items, Final Destination kind of players.
Okay.
You know,
just to reset the stage real quick for those on the podcast who maybe don't know what we're talking about. We're talking about a debate in the Dance Dance Revolution scene that goes back 20 years about is it okay to hold that safety bar on the back while you play the game, or is that, no, you're not dancing, you're just whack-a-moling with your feet. And this endless debate that's been going on here in the year of our Lord 2022. So anyway, sorry. I just wanted to refresh people's memory. So please, your take on the issue.
Yeah, I was one of those folks that used to feel like the bar is cheating. This was, you know, back in the DDR, Fifth Mix, Max, you know, days. But then I started using the bar when I started playing Max 300. And, you know, the difficulty of that song was just so much higher than anything that had come before that it was, you know, it felt like it was something that kind of made it more fair, you know, because just flailing about like that without holding the bar at that speed just seemed a little ridiculous. And then, you know, after a while, especially after In the Groove came out, but even before that, it seemed like everyone pretty much started using it for at least those high level songs, Max 300, Max Unlimited, Paranoia Survivor, and Paranoia Survivor Max, the really hard stuff, the 10 footers, basically. Mm-hmm. And, now the thing is, Konami has their ear to the ground. They have their eyes open. When it seemed like everyone had started using the bar for the high-level songs, it was not a secret for very long, including to Konami themselves. So if you want my honest opinion, I think this probably happened somewhere around Supernova 1 or 2, but somewhere along the line, they absolutely 100% definitely started factoring the bar in as something that players use, and they take that into account now when they design the highest level charts in the game, your 17s and 18s and 19s and what have you. They're assuming that if you are going to play Max 360 Challenge with its 1,000 notes, they are assuming that you are going to be holding the bar for dear life. So I think it is now at the point, I mean, you know, the 13s and under, that kind of thing, that's its own thing. But if you choose to play a high level song like 17 and up, and you choose not to hold the bar, you are not declining a potentially unfair advantage. Rather, you are choosing a handicap that makes the game harder than the game designers intended, because they factored that in when they designed the chart.
I just want to make sure my viewpoint on bar versus no bar is known in this situation here in the year 2022. My current viewpoint on the bar versus no bar is, I don't give a fuck how you play the game. Because honestly, when I look at those 16 and 17 footers, that is all ludicrous shit anyway. And I have a heart attack just reading those fucking charts. So you know what? If you need the bar, I almost said the Bart. If you need the bar to move your feet that fast, go off, sis. I don't give a fuck. I'm 44 and cannot be bothered to have an opinion about your, but just, you know, I hope you wipe down the bar between games. That's all. People put their babies up there to change the diaper. We've seen that.
Excuse me?
No, not. No, that was a Keyboard Mania machine keyboard back mania, in the day. Yeah. That was a Keyboard Mania machine back in the day.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Anyway.
Yeah. Use what you have to use, I guess.
Yeah, like, or you can go with Jason in chat who says, fuck DDR, play Dance Russian Groove. Yeah, that could have been my other witty answer, as I could have said, you know what, can't we just agree? DDR is over anyway.
But it's not. DDR Ace 3 just came out.
I know. I knew that would ruffle your feathers. All right, YYR, I got to wrap up so we can end the show. Quick last thought here, and then we'll let you go.
Okay, I have completed, finally, after over a year, working on the minigames for Super Duper Multitasking. I've moved on to the mission mode, so please continue to look forward to that.
See you next patch.
See you next week.
All right, YYR, take care, my friend.
See you later.
All right, bye. Now it's going to take everything to, like, not do that to callers. See you next week. But I don't want to give Jason a complex either, because it's iconic. We all love his outro. So, all right. I think that's about it. Do you have any other last minute stories you want to squeeze in there before we sign off?
Yeah, as I was mentioning, so Access Games announced 7 games at Anime Expo. So Inescapable is one of those. A lot of these I don't recognize because they look to be very Japanese. So Shuin no Verche, Error Salvation. Maybe that's Verse. I don't know how you spell that. So there's that. And then we've got Spirit Hunter Death Mark 2. Norn 9 Var Cummins and Norn 9 Last Era, Radiant Tail, and Pups and Purrs Pet Shop. That's on the Switch, obviously.
All right. Well, we're towards the end of our show tonight, so thank you so much, everybody, for downloading, listening live, however you participated with the show tonight. Thank you for being a part of it here at Orange Lounge Radio. If you enjoyed what you heard here, tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word, because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices out here to put on air. So thank you to everybody, whether you're chatting, called in, sending in an email or a tweet midweek because you're on the podcast, whatever it is. Just thank you so much for being a part of it. I don't know what else to plug here at the end. Visit our Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord. Tweet at us at OLR. Come here for a live show sometime if you can do it. Sunday nights over at VOG Network on Twitch. That's it. Let's get everybody's final thoughts and we'll sign out for the night. So Loki, it's over to you. Your final thought tonight.
I'm tired.
All right. Well, feel better. My final thought is I'm glad that I have tomorrow off. I mean, I could give a shit about the holiday this year, but I'm just glad I have another day to sleep in because I need it. I really do. For those that do remember Horde House and Grandpa, I will just let you know, Friday night we were hanging out and I was drinking with him. And you can imagine how that went, trying to keep up with drinking with Grandpa. So I'm thankful to have another day to sleep in tomorrow. That's for sure. Have a good week, everybody. We'll see you next time. And hey, guess what? We get to check out that sweet new outro tonight. We'll see you next week, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to vognetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.